start to whisper in the time, allow him to improve myself so that I can allow other people to dwell and to improve themselves. My name is Eric Patrick Svande. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Originally, I'm from Mpumalanga province. What I would request to all of us who are here, like I've already done, okay, before that I would request the honorable members to introduce themselves, but also to indicate that there are members who are still on their way to come here, as I already indicated that NSOP is housed with very limited human resources, meaning that our members serving team members while we are working with a lot of committees, but some of the members are on their way to here. I would request the members to introduce themselves, followed by the staff, and then also to allow the department to anybody else to introduce themselves or herself. Honourable members.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks. I'm Lisa Rajikos, member of the committee and the whip of the committee coming from Bushi State.
Nevertheless, I'll allow my colleagues, Mr. Start this week from the start to introduce themselves.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. Shura Information, content advisor to this committee.
Good morning, everyone. Pilot Kwebu, committee secretary.
Good morning, everyone. Chepo Matani, researcher to the committee.
Okay. Those were members of the staff from our chief. Therefore, I'll give it to the department to introduce itself, followed by Prasa. But we will nevertheless can start this way to the other. No, use your mic, please, because we are recording.
Agency.
Wayne Michael from Independent Newspaper.
Morning, Nicholas Bishop from BMG.
Morning, Chair. I'm Richard Davies from Salford.
Sorry. Come closer to the mic.
Communication
Services. Okay, this is a check manager. I don't know whether he did it to choose his side.
Want to know who you are?
No, that's not never shit. Again, we used to appeal, and we are still appealing, that please make this trip as equal as MA. We requested simple things that before we start any time with our meetings, may please provide us with information, with the document, because we don't want surprise. Ask for us, although we can be small in groups, but we do go deep to the documents. We read through. We don't want surprises that the document submitted to us in the morning before starting the meeting. This thing is nothing goes on. Come to and push and speak to the minister direct, because we are requesting or appealing that provide us with the information in advance so that we prepare for you. To extend this meeting, or how do we deal about our matters? We send you our program in advance so that you prepare yourself. Because it mustn't happen again. Let's put it there. Because next time if it happens again, we'll improvise some means that will request you to go back for the next day or for the next year. But for today, I think we are giving the last one. Let's see if you an opportunity for them to start with the business of the day. I don't know who's doing it, but you're ahead of that.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just want to indicate something so that we do not have problems. The department is responsible for policy and MRASA implement all rail matters. So we did not make a presentation from the department side because everything is implemented at MRASA. So there will be one presentation that will be done by MRASA Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Let's have this opportunity to pass. Let's give it to pass and to start.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. And Chair, I think that you are fed the point you've made about information is well taken. If you accept that, I think that we do think that all the committees, both here in the NCOP and NA equally, and my sincere apologies that we didn't share with you the presentation in advance. I think, Chair, the point of the work taken. Now, I'm going to try to move the speed, but let me just indicate, Chair, who on our side is here. Of course, other than the department, I think that we're brought in the CEO of our rail operation, Mr. Musana Mofi, who's sitting in the middle chair when things go right. I'm the one who takes responsibility. When things go bad, he's the one who's accountable. So he runs our rail division. I think I'll show in the structure how he fits into our rail division, because that's what the subject of the discussion today. We've also invited all the regional managers who run Metrorail across the country. I think that all of them are here, except one, KwaZulu-Natal, who's unable to join us because of ill health. But I think he's sent someone who is here to take copious notes and hear the comments and, from members. We've also got our colleagues from our property or facilities management division, who are responsible for cleanliness and maintenance of stations. We are all here, Chair, and I think that I'm just going to move, as I said, with a bit of speed. I know, of course, that there are issues that impact on the different provinces, the work that we do. We of course, I think that we'll be able to take through the committee and also answer specific questions about the specific regions or provinces if they do arise. I must also say, Chair, we do recognize that there are so many issues in the presentation. We deal at the beginning with the issues at the general level, and of course each one of the issues that is contained here are a subject in themselves, and we'll be more than willing as staff to come back to the committee if there are specific areas that we need even further discussions. See, I think that let me just start with of course where we are, because I think we're making quite a lot of progress. Not only the passenger rail sector, but I think that in terms of public transport at large in the country. I think that those of us who've been involved with transport can safely say that if you go back and look at 7 years ago, 7, 10 years back, the state of public transport was in a terrible state in the country. But I think that government has been put in a lot of resources starting in 2004, 2005, to make sure that we improve public transport in the country. Yes, we are not yet there. We are not having a modern transport system as the country needs. But I can emphasize and say that the foundation for a modern transport system has been laid, particularly public transport, over the past few years. See, I'm saying this because I know that on any given day, we read in the newspapers, we hear what people say, there's no public transport in the country. Yes, we may not have an integrated public transport. We may not have the best transport system, as it were, but I think that we have quite a lot of systems. And not only in rail, with the introduction of BRT, with the introduction of different other systems that promote public transport. So So we are going through a major issue. I must also say, Chair, and recognize the important role that Parliament has played over the years in terms of, I think I've seen in Parliament some of the reports, based on some reports where they call for an improvement in public transport and in rail transport, more specifically. Of course, I think that rail in particular has an important role. If you get it right, if you invest in it, if you maintain it properly, it could, of course, contribute to an efficient transport system. It could facilitate greater access for both the rural and urban poor, and of course, it can promote the socio-economic development. So I think that it has got that potential, and there's no doubt that when you look at the future of our own city, when you look at the future of the country, when you take into account that in about 20 years' time, the majority of the world's people would be living in cities. Of course, I think that raises a major question about how you're going to move goods and people efficiently in a way that will continue to have a viable and efficient city for the people. So I think, Chair, that the railways are the way to go. I don't think that if you look at your transport, you look at your capacities that are there, there's no doubt that the future of our own city, the future of our own development lies with what happens with rail. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to share with the committee three things mainly. The first one, I want to deal with the state of our railways today as we find it in the country, which I think that is the root cause of some of the problems that I think that people are experiencing on any given day. Secondly, I'm going to deal with strategies, short-term strategies that we're implementing, medium-term strategies, as well as long-term strategies. And you'll see that even long-term, short-term for us is 6 to 12 months in the context that we indicate. Medium is 18 months, and of course, long-term, I think about 36 months to moving forward. Let me just give this to Frasa and introduce it. Frasa was established, of course, was launched formally in March 2009. I know that we have entities within Frasa that are quite old, companies like Metro Rail and others in Qatar, but Frasa is a corporate entity. It was only established about 3 years ago, and it was established to champion the improvement in rail, to transform railways, and of course to contribute to an integrated public transport solution. These measures were taken after Cabinet took a decision in December 2004 to consolidate all passenger rail entities in the country. At that time, we were of course talking about Metro Rail, South African Rail Commuter Corporation, and mainline passenger services, that they be brought together into a single entity reporting to the Minister of Transport. So from 2004 till, of course, 2009, there's been that long process. The Act, the Legal Succession Act, was amended accordingly so that we can create this entity called Frasa. So Frasa was established, therefore, to house the assets, the finances, the personnel, and operations of the former South African Rail Commuter Corporation, Intersite, Metro Rail, Shosholoza Mail, and of course the buses, the bus company, Long Intercity Bus Service Authority. So I think it's very important to share that background, because these entities were not one. Some of them were the commuter rail side in terms of assets were managed by the South African Rail Commuter Corporation, which was an agency of the Department of Transport, and the other operations were within Transnet. So that decision is quite important as to where process coming from. In terms of our legislative mandate, you can see, Chair, that the primary object of Frasa according to the Act is to provide urban rail commuter services, and that's Metro Rail in the 6 metropolitan areas of the country. It's to provide long-haul passenger rail services, and that's the long-distance intercity train. And of course, it's to provide long-haul buses, and these are transfers from city to city buses. The secondary mandate that we have from the Act is that we must generate income from the exploitation of assets acquired by Frasa. We own land, we own stations, and therefore we have to exploit those so that we generate income in the way we run the assets. And of course, I'll deal with some of those things in terms of the kind of structure that we put in place. So our vision, of course, is to be South Africa's lead in the provision of passenger services by 2050. I think that is for us, we think that in the high density corridors, that's where rail is supposed to be playing quite a significant role. And I think that's what we're looking for. Our mission is to, of course, to strive for high quality passenger services, through services, excellence, innovation, and modern intervention. If you look at our structure here, you'll see that when we talk about Prasa, we talk about quite a number of companies. We are a group of companies. We've got three divisions and two subsidiaries. The divisions are mainly the Prasa Rail, that is the focus of our discussion today. It's our largest business. That's where Metro Rail as well as Social Roads are made, the mainland passenger services are signed, and the CEO is here, as I explained. We've got Prasa Credit, which is essentially our real estate management and facilities management company. And we've got Prasa Technical, again the CEO is here, the people who do the maintenance on the trade. And then on the subsidiary side, we've got Autopex, and we've got Interside Asset Investment. So this is a structure chair. So we have Prasa as a group, and we've got the different five businesses, each one with its own CEO as well. I just want to start and deal with what are the root causes of the problems and show them in the next 10 minutes, because I think there's been quite a lot of debate about railways. In some instances, people say if you want to get railways to work, devolve it. Other people say if you want to have railways working, you must privatize it. There's been quite a lot of solutions. But I just want to deal with what are the root causes, what are the underlying problems that impact on the current rail system. And in Spain, we need some of the critical transport and economic objectives that government has set. And the first one, Chair, that we want to raise as being at the heart of the challenges facing our railways is the fact that the railway system, and by railway system, I'm referring to the infrastructure, I'm referring to the technology, I'm referring to the operating systems and procedures, I'm referring to the design, and I'm referring to the human being. All of that entire system has reached the end of its design life, meaning that the railway system as we have it in the country was designed at a particular period. It was to support a particular economic development strategy over a period of time. And of course, that I think that it is no longer in a position to take the country where we want it. Technology, we show in the presentation, is totally obsolete and very costly to maintain. The levels of reliability and predictability, and here I mean that if you get to a station, get into a train, rest assured that it's going to arrive on time. I think that if you look over time, particularly since the 1990s, has deteriorated quite significantly, and I'll explain some of the underlying costs. The cost of maintenance, I think, Chair, that the old system, if you look at it, it costs more to run than the benefit it brings. Unfortunately, we don't have the decision, we can't take a decision to shut it down, because there are so many communities who are still dependent on this system. But if you look at the old technology, look at just keeping it going, is one of the major challenges that we have in the country. And therefore, the current metro rail that we have, and I think we saw the Honorable President when he traveled on the train last week, he made an important point that if you don't have your commuter rail system working, it will impact negatively on the economy. And I think the statement we are grateful with. I think that the observation by His Excellency the President is clearly correct, that if you have people who cannot go to work on time, or they don't have affordable and reliable transport, then you are going to have a problem, particularly for those who are at the lower end of the income grouping. So it is a major issue. The industry itself, the Chamber of Commerce, Business Unity South Africa, all of these business entities have raised concern that if we don't have an affordable and efficient and reliable commuter rail system in our cities, then it's going to affect your productivity, going to affect quite a number of things. And I think that if workers arrive at work late, because trains are not moving on time. It is a major problem. So as it stands, this old system that we say has come to the end of its design life is not contributing meaningfully to creating that efficient transport system that the government wants to create. Of course, it's not able also to support economic development, because if the rail sector is I think your predictions are correct. Yes. Some of the graphs and the long distance trains, I think the details are there. 1,223 passenger coaches and pulled by 124 locomotives. Now, Chair, the issue that I want to highlight is that if you look at those two trains or coaches or the entire fleet, let me put it that way, the design and technology dates back to the 1950s. So at that time, it was a revolution. But today, I think 40 years or 50 years down the line, that technology no longer has a place. We just have to build, find nice places and some of the key stations and put some of these trains in the museum so that the future generations of our youth can learn that there was once this type of technology. But it is outdated, it dates back to the 50s and it cannot take us to the future. The average age of a metro rail coach that you see is 40 years. And I think, Chair, when we talk about average, it's misleading because you see in a slide that I'll show that are those that are over 50 years, 52 years, and they should have been scrapped sometime. And of course, on the long distance side, it's 33 years. If you look at the next graph, Chair, it shows you the age profile of the fleet. And unfortunately, I don't have my... Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you were to look in that slide, if I could point there, there's a problem here, Chair. You don't have any trains. If you look at this age profile of this graph, there's nothing here. There's no coaches here. Trains, how train will be here, Chair, in terms of the age profile of each fleet. And therefore, you find its performance up there. Metro rail, you can see that almost the first 20 years, you don't have trains that are within 20 years. Most of the trains are concentrated here. And if you look at this bar, the three last bars, these are the trains that we should be scrapping. Not in the next 20 years. In fact, if we had our wish, we should be scrapping these trains in the next 3 years. Because they will not be safe even to carry people beyond that. It will be uneconomical for us to even refurbish and upgrade this kind of train. Now, let me also explain this different color. Chair, this blue. The train, the majority of the trains, what we call 5M2A. These are the trains that you see, the metro rail trains. And now we have done what we call upgrade of some of those trains. So when we talk about new generation, we're talking about an upgrade of the existing trains. It's not new trains in a modern sense of the word.
There is a cell phone which is on. Please continue, sir.
Chair, go back to that way. So here I was just showing the age profile of our fleet. When I say that it's old, it's not reliable,
catch that.
Now the next slide tells you a story. When you compare, these are metro rail 5M2A trains in red, and this is a modern train that you'll find in the wild today. Whether it's a Hull train, whether it's China, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in Brazil or India, these are the features that tells you what the modern train is. And you can see that the metro rail train, they fail in all respects to meet any international standards, except just to keep them warm on the heating system. So when you talk about mobility in terms of acceleration, in terms of high speed, if you talk about safety in terms of automatic train protection, if you talk about efficiency in terms of power, we fail in all respects. Okay, let me just give you on the energy side as an example. When you take our train and compare it to a train in China or in Spain, our trains, for example, are 5 times heavier, the bogies, the underframe and everything, they are 5 times heavier than a modern train, which means the energy requirement to push those things are just quite too huge. So you could see that you have a stock that is really not in line with even some of the policy objectives of energy efficiency and other things. Now, these are the effects here. A lot of people, of workers, school children will tell you. People will tell you that the train come and stop anywhere. And this may not be a problem with the train, it may be a problem with the signaling system. Because you know, in railways, you cannot move trains. It's not like a car where you can say, I'm going to overtake a broken vehicle or something. Trains move on the same track. And signaling is very important. If you don't want to kill people, signaling is very important. If you want to run trains faster, every 2 minutes a modern signaling system becomes very vital. We don't have that. So you may find that if the signal doesn't work, a train is forced to stop. You can't just move it unless if you take the risk of killing people. And that is one of the major things that you get. And you see people there either jumping. So you can see here, there's a, unfortunately, if you look at the original picture, there's a train behind that failed. So people have to move and come and jump into a different train. Now, from a safety point of view, we know that you cannot have people moving. It breaks the law that people can't jump on and off a train outside of a platform. But this train, this problem happened in the middle of nowhere. And that you find as one of the major causes. And of course, one of the major things is the OP, His Excellency, again, the President. We saw in the newspapers that when he got into our train, in the morning, and this chair is not happening throughout the day. It's happening in the morning peak and the afternoon peak. Between 5:30 and almost 7:30, you find that you have the situation. Afternoon again, anytime from 4:30 until of course 7 or so, you find this kind of thing. And during the day, trains move
like
normally on time and all of those. So it is the demand in that time. Your capacity, you don't have the capacity to move more trains within a very short space of time.
Mm.
What it means is that because there's a lot of people who want to go to work, to school during that time, you need more trains. Now, if you have a modern signaling system, you have a more modern train system, it means you'll be able to move people and more trains closer to each other. Within maybe 3 minutes, if you go to other countries, they move trains. I mean, when I visited Switzerland, they were upgrading their signaling from 3 minutes to moving a train in the peak every 1 minute 53 seconds. When I went there, we were trying to move hours from 15 minutes to about 7 minutes. That was about 4 years ago. So we could see that we've made the revolutions in railways and we are paying the price for meeting that revolution. Now you could see that when people can't go to work, that's what happens. They come. And if someone gets fired at work, or someone is meant to pick up a construction company at park station, and that train doesn't move in time, and somebody jumps into that truck, that's what you're going to have. So that becomes a big problem. Now, what are we doing to address this problem? I think that is the main issue. And I'm going to focus on the short-term, medium, and long-term problems that we have. Of course, I must indicate that the first 3 years, we are not starting with a strategy now. We started with a strategy back in 2006 when government asked us and said, look, we've got a problem. Metro rail is on a knife edge. Metro rail is about to collapse. That's what we had in 2005-2006. And they asked us to take urgent measures to make sure that we save Metro rail. And at that time, you see, because Metro Rail was on the verge of collapse, we said government asked us to stabilize and implement some urgent interventions to save it from possible collapse. And Chair, I think that I must safely say, and without any fear of contradiction, that we've been successful in making sure that we arrest that decline and possible collapse of Metro Rail. If we haven't done that, the cost to the country would have been quite huge. We did a lot, we refurbished a lot of coaches, so that we get the system working. We refurbished and upgraded quite a lot of infrastructure. We spent about 25 billion rand since 2006 till about 2010 to make sure that we get the system going. And we're proud here that not only did we stabilize the service, but we actually put it as the backbone of our public transport system during the FIFA 2010 World Cup. I think, Chair, that the history of the 2010 FIFA World Cup cannot be written. The success cannot be written without acknowledging the central role that our rail system plays as a result of those kind of interventions. In Cape Town, we're the heart of the transport system. We work with the city of Cape Town. We're able to move thousands of people, not only to the stadium, but also to the Pen Park. I think that you go at 2 a.m. at Cape Town Station, we found Metro Rail hard at work, and our employees hard at work. And Chair, you go again to Johannesburg. It's recalled that on the opening game, some people decided that they're going to use their cars and not travel by train. And we had trains from Park Station to Nazareth. Most of those people arrived at the stadium after half time on the opening game. And we saw in subsequent games, both at Soccer City as well as at Edith Park, and people started to use trains and massive numbers. And we've seen a combination, black and white, young and old. We've seen for the first time in many years small children traveling on the system because we put in quite a lot. So we've scored our game in the first phase, that we've arrested the decline of Metro Rail, that it shouldn't collapse, but also we made sure that the 2010 goals are successful. Now, what is our challenge here, having made that success between 2006 and 2010? Our challenge is to now transform the system to being the provider of high-quality passenger services. So we want to move away from stabilizing Metro Rail services to a situation where it can deliver high-quality world-class services to our own people. I think that is the main challenge that we are faced with in this space. And of course, for us to do that, Chair, one of the major things that we are doing is to also transform PRASA after it was launched and make it a commercially viable entity capable of delivering services on a sustainable basis. That is very important, because in as much as passenger services will always be subsidized by government, the reality is that they also need to generate resources from what people pay as well as what the property or the asset generate, as it were. We are structuring the property portfolio, modernizing some of the stations so that we can be able to generate that income. Everywhere around the world, railways, particularly passenger railways, and I think the Gautrain is doing that quite well. They're developing also the property side of the real estate there so that it can generate the income. It will give you 30% of what you need to run the railways. And they'll tell you, go to Germany Berlin Station, they'll tell you that the 30% of the income in Berlin Station, it comes from people who have never actually used a train. They're coming there for either retail or to eat lunch or whatever. That's where they generate their money. Hong Kong has built the same model, but our stations, of course, were the old model where people were just expected to come, get into a train, go to work, and end up sending back again. So we need to change the kind of stations that we have so that in future, railways do not become a burden on the state, but they're quite balanced between what the state provides the support, what you generate from the fare box, as well as from the exploitation of assets. Now, what are some of the short-term strategies that we're implementing to improve railways? See, I think that our rail division, Mr. Mosemo will speak later in the discussion about the program of action, what we call a 90-day program that we put in place to address some of the short-term issues that we think should change, and we are focusing on issues such as the quality and reliability of our services, the safety part of it, the safety of our own operations, cleanliness of our stations, strength and the rail reserve, which you can see people dumping all their stuff from next to the railway line. So I think that's what we're trying to do. Of course, that we are trying to make sure that we improve on the information to the passenger, because passenger information is very critical if you want people to have choices about where they're going, what train is on time, and what other alternatives are available. So the program of action that the rail division is implementing is a very short-term program aimed at ensuring that we alleviate and improve services in the short term, and I'll go into some of the details now. The first one here, of course, is to improve on operational effectiveness. We are not saying because the system is old, there's never been that in the short term we should bring about operational effectiveness. I think the first issue that affects when we do our surveys with the commuter. 5 years ago, when you go into a train on Simon's Town or Michelle's Plain, they'll tell you one thing: safety is our problem. Chair, when we do our survey today, that has changed. People tell you, because we're working with the railway police and our own security, we have reduced a bit, and we will be able to reduce levels of crime on the train. Actually, it went down by almost 40%. In the first 2 years after the introduction of the railway police, they've had over 9,000 arrests for all sorts of things, people bringing knives, so that kind of criminal conduct we've been able to roll back. Today, our survey tells us the number one problem facing people is on-time performance. People want the trains to travel on time. They want to get to work on time, they want to go to school on time. If they've got interviews or they're going to look for work, they want to get there on time. So that is the number one problem. And I think that the short-term program is aimed at doing that. We're seeing some improvements. If you look at the system in the early 70s, 80s, it could give you a performance over 90%. Today, Chair, I think that it dropped to about 77%, but we're trying to push it to about 87% to 90%. And you can see the performance over the past few months, and that we're having growth gains, but not significant enough to make a change. We have to increase train availability, which means the number of trains that we run, so that we increase the chances of a person getting a train if they get to the station, so that they don't wait for an hour. Some few years ago, Chair, we had more trains that were parked outside. When Metro Rail was falling apart, almost 50% of its fleet was non-operational. We had to pump in over 8 billion rand to make sure that we fix those and we get them back into service. And you'll see that when I show in one of the slides that we got, when most of those coaches were put back into service, we had quite a huge increase on passenger services, which means more trains being available for people, particularly in 2009, 10, and of course after 2010 we've had a bit of a decline, and we're picking that up again. So we're trying to improve, of course, the utilization of the assets. I think that is one of the short-term things. We are doing a preventative maintenance program, which I'll deal with in a much greater detail. We are refurbishing more trains. We continue doing that. I think for the past 5 years, Chair, we have been successful in reviving the rail engineering industry. It is gone. The orders that were there for this industry was over about 200 coaches a year. As part of our stabilization program, we pushed the numbers to about 700 coaches a year. And most of the companies were able to upgrade their own production systems capacities, and that is why we're buying new trains. We don't want to ignore, and I want to emphasize that we are not going to ignore the investment that has been made in our existing industries. And that is why you see that our new rolling stock talks about local content as being a key part. But we made those bold decisions. At that time, we were told that there was not enough money, but we made a choice that the job is to ensure that trains are moving. If we're told there's no money, then the system is going to collapse. The cost of bringing it out of that crisis will be quite huge. So I think that we've done quite a lot on the refurbishment and upgrade of coaches, and I'll show some pictures of some of that work. Chair, we've decided that we shouldn't spread. Cabinet took a decision in 2006 when it approved the National Rail Plan. It divided and identified corridors, and based on the volumes of corridors, demand, they did what we call Corridor A, Corridor B, Corridor C. And cabinet instructed us that please make sure that we improve services in Corridor A, which are high volume corridors, where we're moving massive numbers of people. A corridor like Khayelitsha to Cape Town, Michelle's Plain to Cape Town, Umlazi, Durban, KwaMashu in the north. Those are kind of high-volume corridors that are there. Mabopane, Pretoria, into Johannesburg, Naledi, and then, of course, it's London to Tanzania, to Island. So those are corridors on the commuter side where the volumes are very heavy. And Cabinet says, if we give you resources to invest, please make sure that we have a major impact. For first and foremost in those corridors. They're not saying those are the only corridors. They're saying give priority to make sure that you improve the travel experience of those volumes of people in those areas. So operational effectiveness is very important for us, and that's what we're doing in the short term, so that we continue running the system as it is. Chair, one of the major things working with an old system, and you remember when I talk about the fact that there's not been investment in our rail system for over 33 decades, for over 30 years. It's not investment in rolling stock, in infrastructure and operating system. It also lack of investment in maintenance activity. So you find that we never invested even in the right kind of artisans, engineers to maintain the current system. So you see that as the years go by, we accelerated the way the system was not maintained over that period. It resulted in this, it accelerated the decline of the assets as it was. So in the short term, we are changing the way we do maintenance so that we can get more quality out of the maintenance resources we put in there, and we introduce what we call a preventative maintenance program. So we focus on a number of things. Getting the critical components, I think that is very important that we manage that properly, because the components that you use in an old system like this are not always available. So you need to plan well in advance. Your materials management must be up to speed. So that is one of the major things, because you find trains stopping, or even after we refurbish them, sometimes you don't have some of the critical components on the replacement side. So it means even if it's been refurbished, you take it out of the system until you get that component. So managing that part is very critical if your availability needs to be over 90% at all times. The second issue, Chair, is that we're trying to look at wheels. You know, the wheels business, we are only supplied by Transnet at this point in time, but I'll tell you that we experience huge problems where, you know, that a lot of our motor coaches in particular, because these are old trains, they're not modern trains. The modern trains, you find the propulsion is spread throughout the train system, and it increases the reliability. Even if you have one coach failing and breaking down, it doesn't affect the whole train. It is still able to complete the train. In this system that we run, it is pulled by two heads at the both end with one in the middle. Now, if one of those breaks down, the whole train does not work. So that's the price you pay for an old system. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that we sort out wheels and we bring those, because they affect the availability and reliability of the train. So we've had a bit of a fight with the union, but we've insisted that we do night shift and off-peak maintenance of trains, which means at night, in the off-peak and over weekends. Of course, I think that we know that there are difficulties in doing that. But it's very important, Chair, that if you maintain your trains, let's say on Sunday night, you increase the chances of your trains completing its journey the following week. So it's one of the major things that we have. Because when you analyze on Mondays and Fridays, for example, our breakdowns were high. And when you analyze, it was not major issues, are issues that you could do quite properly in terms of. And we had a discussion, and I'm quite pleased that our unions are now in agreement that we must have what we call a rotational shift system. We think it's one of the major transformation issues that we brought in, that was to mean more efficiency, using our people more effectively, but also reducing the chances of our trains breaking down, particularly in the peak period as we move forward. We have intensified our monitoring to ensure that minor problems that have drivers, for example, are required to report if there are problems on the train. In the past, they used to just come park that train and go away. The following day, they come, that very same train is unable to move at the time when it should be at the station. And what we have done is introduce a kind of reporting system which is compulsory, so that they're able to deal with some of the problems, so that if they go away in the evening, our own response teams are able to go in there, solve the problem. That train is quite dysfunctional. So we put in place what we call response team to be able to deal with that. And of course, we continue to refurbish and upgrade a lot of trains, coaches. As you can see in this current financial year, that we'll refurbish and upgrade 580 coaches to the tune of 2 billion rand. Chair, on rail operations, there are certain things that I said. We've also introduced and gone back to the old practice of first line maintenance by driver, because in our own environment we used to have a situation where a train, even on a minor thing, it breaks down. The driver does not even look at that. He just leaves it and wants to call someone from the operating center and say, I've got a problem. So what we have done, we've embarked on a program to reskill our own employees, particularly the driver, so that they're able to deal with some of the most immediate things, so that we don't have train cancellations and delays on matters that could be. Incidentally, Chair, when we had that problem in that train accident last year in Soweto, one of the drivers, he had a fall. He was in attendance on that particular problem when the other train smashed at the back. So it's a kind of discipline that you have. So that first line maintenance is done in any technical environment. You don't always call response teams when you can solve that kind of a problem. And we've seen that contributes to good performance in some of our own regions. Chair, the fault reporting are dealt with it. Then we've decentralized what we call the staging yards. I think let me explain, Chair, what happens here. Trains keep on their paths or stage in one central area. In Cape Town, in Salt River, everyone can see the trains are concentrated there. In Johannesburg, under the Mandela Bridge, in Brampton Bay, in Pretoria and Bloemfontein. Now, what happens is that every driver in the morning must go to that central point to take a train. Now, even if the first train with passengers moves at 5:30 or 4:30 in the morning, the drivers are already there at 2 a.m. to pick up that train. So before we even move passengers, we've got a huge operation, an operation that doesn't even carry passengers. Mm. The cost of doing that is quite huge. Mm. But I'll tell you that most of the trains break down even before they carry passengers at 2 a.m. So what we have done is that we've then said, let us decentralize the staging here so that in the morning, and we've done it in Naledi already, we've done it on the Yester Fabric line where trains split there, our response teams don't maintain. In the morning, it's not taking an empty trip from Bloemfontein to Mabopane. It is at Mabopane station, facing where it should be going. And we think that it's working out there because the chances of that train completing its journey is quite higher than a train that would sleep somewhere, it is not maintained, and that way. I think that I've spoken about the shift system, and I think that in some instances we started to introduce the SMS system, which I think has been working very well here in Cape Town, and I think that we've introduced some elements of that in Gauteng, where people now can get an SMS before and say, on your line, it's not telling you about Cape Town. It's saying if you are traveling on the Naledi line, it gives you well in time when you leave home, you know that trains are on time on that corridor, or if there are problems, it gives you and say that there's a problem, there's either cable theft or something like that, and that would be a 20-minute delay or something like that, so that you can exercise your options well in time. And I think that, Chair, we think that is part of the key strategy that we have. Railway safety, Chair, I think if you look at our accidents, of course, the number of accidents in railways are not a lot. But the number of people who are involved are quite a lot. So you have a lot of accidents on the roadside, on taxis, on buses, on a daily basis. But for us, if we have the two accidents that we had last year, they cancel the entire record because we have a lot of people on board the train. If a taxi is carrying 16 people, that train in a peak is carrying 2,000 people. So that's where the difference is. And that is why it's very important that the safety side of the operations you always maintain, because the risk to human life is quite huge, and it's something that we cannot afford. And I think we've been very lucky that in both accidents that happened last year, we never lost any except, of course, unfortunately, for our driver in Pretoria. But other than that, I think that we've been very fortunate that we could have had a catastrophe. And I think that God has been on our side in a way. Because when I looked at the circumstances on why of the accident, it's quite clear that we were very lucky. I actually was quite surprised that we never had casualties, particularly in the Soweto accident and on the Pretoria one. But if you look at those accidents, human error has been the main cause. You'd expect that in an old system like this one, you have the main accidents being caused by systems failures, signaling not working or brakes not working. No. All the accidents occurred in the past 3 years have been due to what we call human error, which means either the negligence of someone or people not following procedures. Or, for example, I think that we saw in both the accidents last year in Pretoria and Soweto that they were because of drivers ignoring, for example, signals that were in proper working conditions, and the results have been quite costly for us. Now, Chair, how do you manage that? We have what we call the human factor management program. We work with the rail safety regulator, and I think that it recently launched what we call the human factor management plan. Chair, we do quite a number of things. We have increased our supervision and even random checks to make sure that it's fit for duty. Where we come and like the drivers on the road, given to check whether you know they've abused any substance abuse, whether they're fit to do that. That is one of the major programs that we have. We bought in some machines to train our drivers differently from Germany, what you call the train simulator, so that people can see under the different conditions when they drive under a fork or under the wet conditions and those type of things. We've increased the medical surveillance of the safety critical train. A train driver is critical. You need to make sure that his eyesight is always, you know, if he can't see, he must be wearing glasses. So it is one of the things that we've got our own clinics where people go there and get checked. You don't want the situation where if someone say, I didn't see the colors, I didn't see whether it was red or green. And then when the medical comes up, we find that we didn't check this employee. He shouldn't have been allowed to drive because it's actually negligence. We pay the price as a company. So medical surveillance for train drivers in particular, for what you call train control officers, is one of the major issues that we have. And we implement it religiously. Our people go there at least once a year, and some of them go there twice, and they get referrals to specialists in that case, and we spend quite a huge amount of money on the medical surveillance program around the country. And of course, let me talk about the training itself. Because I saw people were asking with the last train accident whether our drivers are properly trained. Chair, I it's some of the things that I don't even take kindly to personally. I know that we can't risk people's lives by putting drivers that are not trained. Our drivers are well trained. Not only do they take almost 18 months out of training, and so I must say that the CEO of the rail division has himself just completed the training, a driver training program. So I expect that when we have difficulties, he will get onto the train and drive the train himself. He's completed that program. But it takes 18 months. People are well trained, not only about the workings of the train, not about the dynamics of the train, but one of the major things is on route knowledge. So that you get in there, you know the route of that particular, because you're not driving all over. You get your experience there. You know by heart even how many signals are there. So no one can say that, and they go to refresher courses there, and now we're taking them through that reskilling program. So our drivers rank among some of the most. I think that between us and Transnet, these are guys who've driven trains, not for the past 5 years. But some of them have driven trains. I mean, I've had, when I was giving certificates to some of our own employees, there's one who's driven the train 35 years and has never been involved in an accident. And if you calculate the number of hours he has done, so we must pay tribute to these railway workers, to this railway workers who, despite an old system, old technology, despite the challenges, sometimes they abuse when trains are not moving properly, they keep on saving and showing the commitment. So I want to give the committee an assurance that our people are trained and they are well trained for that matter. Of course, long term on the safety side, I want to say, Chair, that the current trains, if we had what we call automatic train protection, which means onboard signaling facility, both the train accidents in Soweto and Pretoria will not have happened. The modern train, how train has got that? Automatic train protection. If a driver doesn't follow the rules, this thing is electronically governed. It knows the speed limits on that particular route. It will apply brakes. If it comes closer to another train, it will sense that there's a train and starts flashing. If the driver has a heart attack on a train, is disabled, that train will, as it moves, apply brakes. But this today's train, we don't have that. So one of the major features of the new modern trains we are buying is to have that automatic train protection, so that we can have a system that we know that is quiet, is quiet, is quiet, is quiet. So I'm trying to pick up the my feet so that I can also move with my feet. So I think on the safety and clean environment, we're doing a lot. I know that it's one campaign that I've taken personally. I've been visiting stations. I've gone with the CEO of the railways and to go and see the conditions of our station. And so we've surprised a lot of people. I heard on TV last week when His Excellency the President was visiting our station, there was a comment made by one of the presenters that, oh, the station looks clean because the President is visiting. I think that honorable members should actually go unannounced to some of our stations. I can assure you, yes, there are stations where we get embarrassed because people are not doing, but generally, you come, you go to the Cape, you go to KwaZulu-Natal, you go to our stations in Gauteng, they are well maintained on a given day. But there are, I think, instances where our people, for example, or our contractors that we employ, do not do their work. I visited 2 months ago Park Station. Now, Park Station is the number one station in the country. And I found it in terrible condition. Despite the fact that we've contracted 7 companies to do the work at the airport 24 hours, it was in a terrible condition. And I took the decision to fire those companies on the spot. I know that the people have said it's not properly done, but we can't. We just can't when our number one facility in the country is actually allowed to deteriorate in a manner that even rich people have. Yet we're paying the public, because it's government money, that there's public funds that we're spending. So I think we've done that. Chair, in the past, the station like Jimmy said, we found it was in a terrible condition. Again, Chair, we intervened. Today you go there, you'll be proud of what you see in that station. Recently our team visited Danswap in the Israel. We found the station not in a very good condition as well. Again, we put resources and make sure that it's not good. But generally, you go to our station, you'll find the Minister of Transport, the former Minister of Transport, rather, last month, also took a surprise visit when during the African Renaissance Conference in Durban. And he took some of his colleagues from the African continent who were attending that conference to Durban Station, unannounced. And it was quite surprised that the stations have been actually kept. It's not sometimes it's a perception of those that we have. Of course, there are weaknesses. One of the major weaknesses, for example, we find is that our relationship with the cities, and we find that station, sometimes when we keep it clean inside, you find that the surrounding areas are in terrible condition. And we don't want the organs of state for us blaming the city. And the city, but we have to work together. So you find that station around it, we're not happy because it's not attractive to people. And we think, for example, the Johannesburg Metropolis should be doing something to manage, for example, the way business is done, and that we have littering. We have just, for example, with a visit last week of the president, the city of Johannesburg is leasing the land for the rent behind the station. Again, it's not been kept clean. In the record, it is a Prasa asset. It's not operated by Prasa every day. But again, we found a way with the city of Johannesburg. So no. The blame game cannot help. Let's find a model that makes us that we clean, we maintain together. So, Chair, I'm quite satisfied that the maintenance part of the facilities has improved. And the infrastructure side, Chair, you could see that we've put in a lot of resources. As part of that 25 billion rand, I want to show some of the pictures to show some of the changes. If you see this picture, Chair, that before in 2006-2007, you find most of our stations like this. There are stations who are still like this. That gap is a major safety issue. But also for people with special needs and older people and children, it is a problem. Sometimes people fall, they break their legs, and everything. Sometimes it can even go to extreme. But Chair, we implemented what we call a platform enhancement program, and you can see what we've done here. This is the same station, count station, before and after. To this picture the gap, this is what we've done. And you can see here how easy it is. And you go to stations like Newlands, stations like Delibrom, you find that we've made that intervention. Stations like Resic, you find that we've implemented where we improve the platform so that it can be more accessible. So if you look at the accidents rate again, you could see that it does take two accidents. But all of them have been on a downward trend, as it were, because I think that even the rail safety regulator, which always submits its reports to Parliament, has been very clear that we do PRASA actually manages its safety record, the safety program more carefully. I think there, Chair, we're very fortunate because our CEO of the rail of our rail division was a former CEO of the rail safety regulator. And I always say that, Chair, that he wrote a lot of instructions when he was on the other side of town, instructing us to say keep the train doors closed and everything. So when we employed him as a board, we reminded him, we gave him his own letters that he signed to us and said, can you solve this problem? And we see that it is indeed working quite well for us. Chair, I think that passenger performance, you could see that that's the point that I was making here. If you look at the passenger safety chair, you could see that they were at some stage around almost 90%. And we've lost a bit of that. And I think that it's quite clear that we are recovering some of them. At its best, this system was doing 790 million passenger trips a year. And it deteriorated to about just below 500, and we brought it back to about 550, and hoping that we'll increase that moving forward. Cleaning of stations, Chair, I've dealt with that, the examples, but one of the things that I want to emphasize that we've just agreed and started some cooperatives with people who live next to some of those lines. I think in KZN, for example, we're doing it on the south line, where we have Abogogo taking over the cleaning of that corridor. We'll be launching that program in September around the country, where the cleaning will be done, because we have employed companies, they haven't done their work. So here we've then taken committee members, trained them, and everything. Of course, they have to be supported. Other than the normal cleaning, we need, of course, the high-pressure machines once in a while and for that kind of cleaning that you require in an environment of similar to. On the refurbishment of stations, we've got two types of programs. Part of our program, we've introduced what we call National Station Improvement Project. And you can see the number of stations. This is not a huge program. It's a small program where we spend about $1 million to $2 million per station to fix toilets, fencing, lights, and all of those kind of things, so that the commuters can have a better facility. Even if it's not developed, we are not changing into a mall, but that's the basic experience. People want lights for security. They want proper fencing. They want proper toilets. They want the proper ticketing solution. And that program, if you look for the past 4 years, we've done well, where we've been fixing and improving, bringing improvements to over 100 stations in 1 year. And you can see for this financial year, Chair, that we put 98 into that program, so hopefully by the end of the financial year, in March, we'll have brought in those kind of things. We've got massive upgrades of stations. Again, that is one of the major things, Chair, that at the end of the financial year. And this you can see, Chair, some of the stations that we've been bringing in. You can see that the kind of cleanliness, and also putting signage is the most important thing. When people come in there, one of the major things, they know where to go at the station. We put that around most of our stations, and we can see it around. Chair, honorable members, I think that here in Cape Town, anyone who knows the conditions of Cape Town Station, 5 years ago, you couldn't even move. We spent 500 million rand on the station, and we've created a modern facility. Today, it's not only for commuters. This station is a modern generation station, natural light, free movement for passengers, safety. And I think that even some of the colleagues who work in the airport environment, they consider this is one of the projects that we've done well is an intermodal facility. It's one of the stations that is generating a lot of money for PRASA, and most importantly, CIUC. Even over weekends, functions are now being held there. Even people who are doing filming in Cape Town, they now use this Cape Town. And that is why I'm keen to sign the proper contract so that we generate the money. But they do come, and I think that the environment is very receptive, Chair. Yes, it is. King William Station, you can see, Chair. And we've done quite a lot of things. East London, Devon Station, we've done quite a lot. Nazareth Station, Orlando. These are the stations that we've put in a lot of resources, and there have been visible changes there. Chair, our workplace improvement, you can see that we take before and after. This was the kind of chaos that we find. And if you go to Bramfontein, those honorable members were invited to a launch of our initial program. We tell you that we took them on a walkabout of the Bramfontein facility. I think that we are now managing it as a water transport facility, so that we can do the maintenance. So, Chair, those are short-term strategies. Let me quickly deal with them, our medium-term strategies. Chair, I think that we are investing, of course, in what we call a capacity enhancement project. Chair, I'm not going to talk about the chains again. I'll show the slide which is giving us the numbers of coaches that we are refurbishing as part of capacity enhancement. Bridge City project, I've got pictures below, Chair, that will show what we are doing to enhance the capacity in the medium term. So you can see that we've identified what we call demonstration corridors. And these are corridors that are in what we call priority A corridors that were identified by companies. We are saying that these corridors by 2014, they must be world class. So they must have certain things. They must have modern rolling stock. They must have modern stations. They must have a proper communication system. They must be accessible. So they must be world class. And these corridors, you can see, Chair, that's where the majority of people move. Mabopane, Pretoria, a huge number there. Over 50,000 people move in the morning peak on that line. So we in the morning peak alone. So if you look at it, you look at the passenger trips, they're quite huge there. Pretoria, Johannesburg is very important. And then, of course, the Lerala, Johannesburg on the side of Tembisa is quite huge. Naledi is very important for us. George Cope and Crown. And of course, in Durban, Umlaas is Durban, and Kwamashu is a very important demonstration corridor for us. Lots of people move onto that line. In Cape Town, of course, you can see that Kai Richard and Chris are in Cape Town. The Gaffin Chef on the side of Mission State, Cape Town. There are two corridors, but you've got also the southern line, Samuels Town, and as well as the northern line, also performing quite well. So this picture was taken last week. It's a picture of the modern gate system that we're introducing across the country. This was just put last week in Pretoria Station. And if you go to other stations, you see Cape Town Station has got them. And you go to stations, we're doing it on the entire Mabopane corridor, from Mabopane to Pretoria to Jamestown to Park Station and to Naledi. That's the first corridor that we are. PRASA is spending 1.9 billion rand in putting together this system. What it means, Chair, is that once you put this infrastructure in place, we'll then be able to introduce a ticketing solution, a card system. Meaning, therefore, that PRASA and Gautrain, or PRASA and the Metro Bus in Johannesburg, can agree to use one ticketing solution, for example, to meet the requirements that we have. But the first step is this one, and I think that you can visit some of the stations. We are rolling out this model. This is part of our modernization drive that we are implementing. Okay, if you look at the number of coaches, as I said, if you look here, this was 2005-2006. Majority of the coaches were not working. They were passed outside, almost 40%. Metro Rail has 4,600 coaches. About 2008 were working. The rest were passed outside. So you couldn't fulfill its responsibility. Yet the number of coaches that were being upgraded and refurbished, it didn't match that kind of requirement. But you could see that since 2006, and we didn't even have money here. We just said we're just gonna do it and make sure that the trains are moving. Over time, we've increased the number of coaches that we refurbish and upgrade. And as I said, that in the last financial year, we had the target of 530, we delivered 510, which was a 3% performance for us. Now, this is what we refer when we talk about the upgrade. Here's the 1956, the train, the majority of our trains. 87% of our fleet is this train, today as we speak. Most of these were built in Niger, Union Carriage, and Weathers. They are the people who built this train. 1956 technology, as I said. They've come to the end of their life. Now, we know that we must embark on the replacement strategy. I'll talk about it. But in the short term, in the medium term, what we're doing is that we're taking these coaches. This coach, we're converting into this. Inside it, you can see it looks like this, and then that's what we have. And you'll see that we've got 15% of our fleet now being like this because of the money we spend on them. And Chair, I'm not talking about the future. I'm talking about trains that are running. You can find them in Johannesburg. They are done by the Transnet Rail Engineering in Kuduspoor. They're also done by Union Carriage in Niger. And now we've allowed one of our companies, our contractors, to do that in Johannesburg as well, so that we have that upgrade. Because some of the fleet, if we convert them, out of this train, if it's almost at the end of its life, if we put in money, of course, a coach, an upgrade is expensive. We spend on average about 7 million per coach just to convert this thing from what it is into this. Of course, with some modernization, like braking systems and everything, that's so that's what has been behind the revival of the rail engineering industry over the years. Okay, another project that we're implementing on capacity, you will not see, but you can see the bar that's there. You can see what we are building here. So this is in KwaZulu-Natal, between KwaMashu, Duzuma, Phoenix. Plus, I have invested 1.2 billion rand into this particular project. We are now in the third phase. The first phase, Chair, was for us to build what we call a concrete box. We built an underground station there. It's complete, it's working, Chair, and I think that at some stage we'll invite the committee to visit it. There's a mall that has been built on top of that station. And because that's what we want, where stations are part of the development that we do. The second part of that chair has been, the second part of that particular project has been the building of a railway line to link the big city to what we call Duff's Road Station. Chair, this is basically, you can see that 60% of that work is already unfolding. This is what our investment is. What it means, Chair, is that the people who live in Phoenix, KwaMashu, Duzuma, and Inanda area, what we call the Ind region, will be able to have greater access to Durban as we move forward. We expect over 40,000 people to travel on that line when it's completed in March 2013. So that is a medium term project. It's not even future. So this is in Pretoria, Mamelodi, Pinaspoort, Greenview. We had only one line from Yesterfa Bridge to Pinaspoort. It in the past, it used not to be a railway, a passenger railway. It used to be freight. There was one line. But then Transnet, because there's been a lot of informal settlements and everything, the passenger numbers have grown there. So they created a makeshift station about 10 years ago. That station is now over one small platform, one platform, and you have to wait for 30 minutes for one train to come in, which is one line, to go out. So we started, I visited the community in 2009. We had a mass meeting, they said we need better services, and then we agreed that we'll start a project to double the track and build the three more stations. Chair, this is the project that is currently unfolding. Again, it was due to be complete in March next year, but we had about a 5-month delay because the main contractor was liquidated, but I think that we're back on track, and this project should be done in the middle of 2013. And I think that what it means is that for the community that used to wait for 30 minutes, they now get a train every 7 minutes on that in the morning peak and the afternoon peak. So we are spending 400 million rand on this particular project to bring in those improvements. Long-term strategy, Chair, I just want to focus on three and then close. Of course, I think that I would have preferred to say whatever I wanted to say on this particular program, particularly the new trends, in the absence of the media, But because it's an open session, I will restrict myself to what I have to say formally, Chair. We are in the middle, of course, of a supply of a procurement process. Chair, we are buying new chairs. As you can see, that we are upgrading and refurbishing the factory. We have now reached a point where we can no longer upgrade and refurbish as the main form of our strategy. We have now come to a point where we have to replace the existing fleet. Chair, I can confirm that we've done a feasibility study. Working with the Department of Transport, National Treasury, Department of Public Enterprise, and the feasibility study showed that this country requires 7,224 new modern coaches over a period of 20 years. That will not buy in the first 10 years the first 3,600 coaches. Chair, we've been consulting the market, the industry. We've done roadshows internationally. We've had two major market engagements, including one for BE players in the country. Of course, I read in the newspaper that we are not committed to black economic empowerment. But, Chair, we are buying those things. We've been given in black and white letters confirmation from government, both our Minister of Transport as well as the Minister of Treasury. And I think you heard during the budget vote, the Minister confirmed that we'll buy these coaches. And let me confirm that on the 19th of April, we went out, we issued a request for proposal. That request for proposal is for companies to give us proposals on the design of these modern trains. These trains, we have asked them to give us a product, a train that will run for the next 40 years on our line. It must be a modern train, it must be safe, it must have automatic train protection as I said, it must be energy efficient. The carrying capacities must be huge. It must be the overall maintenance cost in the long run must be quite affordable. That's what we've decided to do. The companies are busy writing up their proposals to give to us. So, Chair, I must say that I know that a lot of companies have said we are running a tight program. Yes, it is an ambitious program, but we are determined to make sure that we get these trains as quickly as possible. Come November this year, we will announce a preferred bidder that we must start to negotiate with and reach conclusion. Now, Chair, I know that with the problems that we are facing, a lot of people have asked us, why don't we buy the trains tomorrow? And we know that we've made the choice as government. We can go and buy the trains overseas. We can take out money and say we want to order these trains in Germany or in China, or in Spain, or in Canada, wherever they're made. We can have them next year. But Chair, we've made a choice. The choice we've made is that we've got socio-economic challenges in the country, and that we must use this investment to revitalize our rail engineering industry. So these trains are not going to be imported. They are going to be built in the country. So that is why, Chair, we need to establish even the modern facilities that we require in here. So we're not going to buy countries. They're not going to be manufactured somewhere in the UK or in Germany and then assembled here. We are saying build the plant here. And that 65% of the components of that train must be components that are manufactured here so that we can revive our industry. We can make sure that we promote local manufacturing in this particular sector. And we create an industry that has got the capacity to design, manufacture, and export trains in the future. We've made a lot of progress. Unfortunately, because of that, Chair, we're not going to get the first train in. It means we're going to run the first train in 2014, 2015. We expect the first train to be tested in 2015. Chair, but it's a choice that we've made. Because if we do that, we're able through this program to create, I think that our feasibility shows that we can create 5,000 jobs out of this particular program. So I know that when even I met with some of the stakeholders, like COSATU here in the Western Cape, they said, you know, you're starting too late. You should have started this program 10 years ago. But ultimately, we agreed that 2 years for a program like this, for an investment over the next 20 years, is not a long time to wait. We are not starting in 2015. We are starting now. As I said, that we'll appoint the prepared bidder this year, and that in the middle of next year, we'll reach financial close
sign the contract, formally place the order, and then the work can begin, and we can ensure that we have this kind of thing. So, Chair, this program is not just only about delivering care. It's about local manufacturing, also it's about jobs, and I think that's what we're trying to do. It's also an opportunity for us to train a new generation of railway workers. We need new engineers, new artisans. I think that when we're traveling abroad as part of this program, one of the major important skills that we find from modern training is welding. I tell you, Chair, that if you go in our township, people talk about welding, they see it as just another skill. Something that is not there, they don't take it seriously. Internationally, in the railway industry, if you say that you are building your train, the quality of your maintenance of your welding has an impact on the safety of your own train. And that is why they pay so much attention. So they've got the engineer and they've got the artisan such as welding. So one of the major things is to ensure that that's still part of it. So this program has got multiple objectives. Yes, it's about delivering modern trains so that our people can travel comfortably, safely, with speed, but at the same time, it's about all those kind of objectives. And I think that we'll pay a heavy price if we want to just have trains without reviving our industry and doing the other objectives that government has set itself. And so, Chair, we are acquiring the modern. It's no longer a rumor. It's something that we are doing now. And as I said, that we'll announce the bidder, the preferred bidder at the end of November. We're not working alone. We've got the steering committee. We're working with the Department of Transport. We're working with the National Treasury. We're working with the Department of Public Enterprises, because there's a role for other players like Transnet and the other role players like the National Empowerment Fund and everything. And I must assure the committee again, there's a very huge stake for black economic empowerment. Unlike what is being said, that we want to put black people as beggars. I want to put it on record, Chair, that there is a huge stake. We have said between 26% and 40%. So our black economy equity into this particular deal for black business would be up to 40%. But what we have said, Chair, is that we want different kind of black business to participate here. We don't want guys who want to make quick money and run away. We want black business that says we are going to share in your industrial objectives. We want to be part of this industry moving forward. This thing that we are going to come and sign, once the contract has been signed and this guy sells even state, take 800 million and disappear, we'll never support that. So I think, Chair, it's very important that we emphasize that point. So, but there is a huge thing. But not only are we saying that there must be equity for black business, we've also said that 65% of the content must be produced here, meaning that black companies, black engineering companies, would be able to participate in this program as effectively. And I think, Chair, that we've set a different strategy that we think that will benefit black businesses as well. The old model where big business brings their own black face and they win a contract on the basis of that is something that we've dealt with in this particular program. And that is why you see some people being very unhappy, because they just want to come in, sign a contract, but they're not bringing it. There's a lot of companies in the race sector who today are involved in it. Some of them are women-owned companies. We think that they equally must be given a stake in this. And let me finally say, Chair, from a BE perspective, this thing that big companies will then bring two black men, to come and have a stake is something that we also do not support. Some of the people that are debating with out there, I ask them, but what about our workers? We've got workers who work for this company for 30 years. They must be given a stake in this particular process. They've given their lives, they continue making sacrifices. So it can't just be about few people. If you say it must be broad-based, black economic empowerment, surely that we must then think of the workers. We must think of the disabled people. We must think of women. And I think that we've designed a program that is attractive, that will ensure that we've got the type of black economic empowerment that takes an active part, that also is a passive, that also supplies in this industry, and I think that is the kind of direction that we want. So we are not going to, even in the face of abuse and attacks,
by those who got vested interest in this particular program. We're not just going to retreat, Chair. We're saying that we're going to push very strongly and make sure that we've got a program that benefits the country. Ultimately, the country comes first, not the interest of some few black business people who want to make their interest to take precedence over the country. And I think it's something that we feel very strongly about. In a couple of weeks, we will announce our program, how this BE program is going to unfold. And I think that it's going to be very interesting, because the way we structure these things is aimed at ensuring that ordinary people are given equal chance to participate in this industry. If South Africa, it's 50 million of us, or 49 million, whatever the number is now. If 49 million South Africans are here, then each one of them must say, they may not exercise that option, but they must have an opportunity to participate in this. And that's how we structured our program in this population. Majority of those 49 million South Africans happen to be black. So, Chair, I think that we, for us, black economic empowerment is very important. So, Chair, Rolling Stock, we are buying. I think that's a program that we started and we're currently underway. Secondly, we have the National Signaling Upgrade Program. Chair, we've appointed Siemens to introduce a modern signaling system to build us a modern centralized train control center in Kalfontein. That work is happening now. It will take them about 5 years to complete that. They've also done some temporary interventions, short-term interventions, which are working. And Chair, we are about, at the end of July, we'll announce the two companies that will do the signaling modernization for the region of Durban, Ethekwini, the commuter rail system, and of course for the Western Cape commuter rail system. I think that all in all, Plata will invest 7 billion rand into this signaling program as part of that modernization, because by 2015 you need to have, before the trains come in, you need to have a signaling system that is working. In addition to that, Chair, we're building new depots. I think you heard the Minister of Finance at the beginning of the year who said that we are putting aside $1 billion rand for Plata to build the modern depots, so that the new trains must be maintained in new modern depots. We've made a decision that we'll build two and modernize two of the existing so that we can be able to do that. Chair, we are looking at other options. I'm not going to talk today about the value of the rail properties. I think that is a topic in its own on the system today. But I think it's an area that when we look at the sustainability of Plata and of the future rail system, we can be able to do that. So let me, of course, finally deal with the issue about, there's a question that is being asked. Are we going to extend railway lines in the country? There's no doubt we have to extend railway lines. Whether we're going to do it in the short term or medium term, and how we're going to sequence. I think, yes, in the short term, we need to get the coaches, the modern train system, and signaling working. There's no doubt that there's a part of investment. But we have to plan. And in our planning, we've made provision for a number of projects that needs to happen, Chair. The first one is the Johannesburg-Durban high-speed rail. Yes, we're not saying the next 10 years that's what this country is going to have. But there's no doubt that 15 years from today, the busiest corridor between in the country, Johannesburg and Durban, is going to require a train system of a different speed. Not 70 kilometers as you do now, but a train system that moves at a minimum 250 kilometers per hour. Because high speed is not 150, it's not 160. High speed is 200, any speed about 220 kilometers per hour. So we think that we need to do detailed planning on this particular project. Whether it must be done through concessioning, the different methods together, but it's something that the country is going to require 15 years from today. So we have to plan for the future. So as we sort out the current commuter rail system, we have to plan. We need to ensure that between Johannesburg and Durban, there's a train system that reduces travel to 3 hours in one direction. Let me put it simply, Chair. We want a man who lives in Newcastle, who currently has to stay in a hostel somewhere in Johannesburg, to be able to travel to work in the morning, come back home in the evening on that high speed rail, still be able to help his children with homework in the evening, and be able to watch TV with them. Chair, we are not the first people to dream in this way. In 2000, I traveled to China, and I got there, and I had to connect from Beijing to Shanghai. I traveled on a train, it's like our mainline passenger service. It took us 12 hours overnight from Beijing to Shanghai, similar to our mainline passenger service. China took a bold step. Today, it takes you three and a half hours to travel from Beijing to Shanghai on their 350 to 400 kilometer high speed railways. They built it, they've done it. Spain has done it. South Africa has met three railway revolutions. The Chinese will tell you today that where South Africa is today, that's where they were about 15, 20 years ago. They made the decision to invest in the railway system. And today the railway system is boosted among the best and it has become the backbone of the transport system. So connecting Johannesburg and Durban and managing that line, getting passengers to move during the day on high speed, and getting freight to move also on a relatively high speed at night is what this country requires. And I think that's what we're planning and that's what we're working on. Chair, here, Johannesburg, Queenstown, Tata Rail Project, we've already committed in this MTF over 400 million rand because currently there's a Kai Rail. It moves across very slow. It will never work. If you want people to connect quicker, faster between Johannesburg, between Umtata and East London, then we must do it by Queenstown. And Chair, there is an existing railway line there. We want to revive that. We put 450. We are doing a condition assessment of that line. And we built about 8 different stations and so that we have more people traveling on the train. Then, so it will serve not only Queenstown. My last slide, Chair, I think. So, Chair, the Queenstown and Tata rail line, of course, we've been to Johannesburg, Queenstown and Tata, and of course, in East London. Moloto Rail Corridor, it was approved by Cabinet. Again, when it was approved, that it must be on a new basis, it must be a high-speed train between Moloto into Gauteng. And I think that at that time, Cabinet approved it at about 8.6 billion rand. I think the numbers have changed now, and I think there's discussion within government about how best we move and do this particular project. But it's part of the future. If you want to connect, not only Mpumalanga, that is very important, but also part of Skukume into Gauteng much faster, this particular project is very important. So the first phase is Moloto, but the second phase, of course, goes as far as Skukume land, and we've done the feasibility study around that. Vara Link, I think, Chair, that the east of, or rather the west of Soweto, where there's Baragwanath and there's the old Vista University, there's been quite enormous growth there. We want to connect the current Nazareth line into Soweto and add more numbers into that rail system. So it's one of the projects, I think, that estimated is about 10.2 billion. With the Davitan rail extension, majority of people in the east rent, you find them in that zone. So we want to do the Davitan rail extension and take that line forward for another 5 kilometers and add more stations and accessibility. Chair, there is an existing line in Hammanskraal. We are not building a new line. The main line is there, but it's been used mainly for main line and not for passengers. It takes people from Hammanskraal 2 hours to get from Hammanskraal to Pretoria. Yet they are on the edge of Pretoria. So the upgrade there and the creation of stations will ensure that we introduce a system that is needed. Motherwell rail extension in Port Elizabeth, Chair, the Motherwell township has been growing quite enormously. Our railway line is outside of the major development. And we've got a 7 kilometer rail linking the current line to Motherwell. And we've just completed the feasibility study, we've budgeted for it, so we'll start construction sometime next year on this particular project. That will be the first phase into Motherwell. The second phase, of course, will go to the port, Muha. So that the development there is supported by rail services. Chair, I shouldn't have put this, but I think I must put it, Cape Town International Airport Rally. I know that the city says it is a luxury. It is not a luxury. Yes, we are not saying we are going to build it tomorrow. But Chair, internationally, when the airport grows, when the numbers grow, the passenger numbers exceed 7 million passengers per annum, you require a rail solution, or else you are going to clog and kill your airport. The Cape Town International Airport has been growing, but in the next 5 years, its numbers will be in excess of 12 million passengers. The MyCT bus service will not be the trick. What we are proposing there is just to link the airport to an existing railway line. We are not asking for major things. But I know that the said is a trick. It is a luxury. It is not a luxury. It is a necessity of our time. Modern airports internationally are linked to railways. And I want to, of course, urge the city that we don't miss yet another railway revolution to connect our airports with the city. Fortunately, in KZN, this will be my last point, Kinshasa International Airport. I'm glad that we have agreed with the provincial government and the city of Durban, of Etegwini, that we are going to require that link to the airport. The airport, yes, it doesn't have the huge numbers today. We provide what we call a temporary solution. There's a station behind that. We'll start to run services later in the year on that line so that people can get better access to that particular line. And of course, I think that later on, then build a line directly into the airport. And I know that the airport company of South Africa, in their planning for the airport, they've made provision for this. I know when there are problems, people only think of immediate problems. But we have to think bigger. I've been in two other things, sir. I think that one of the projects that we have is, for example, the line in Mangaung. And we've agreed with the province and the department. Unfortunately, when we were meant to implement that, we were taken to court by the bus operators who felt that they are going to lose the subsidy. But we agreed with the province that it's a project that needs to be done in there. Okay, I think, of course, let me show that this is an example of the new modern train that we are trying to build for the country. We'll launch the proper design once we have accepted from the preferred bidder, but this was just done for purposes of showing people the kind of train that we want to build. And so those are the details of the rolling stock. I won't go much into them, and the timelines, as I explained, I think that are part of the presentation. I won't go into that detail. Long distance, and I think you'll see finally our capital program that in the next 3 years, Prasa will spend another 25 billion rand trying to refurbish and keep the system going. So, Chair, these are the package of measures in the short term, medium term, and long term. So I think that's why we've put together the team to present to the committee. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your maybe direct information. But nevertheless, I'll give it to the members to start maybe to ask some questions and other things. And I'll be the last one to comment. Let me give them an opportunity to start to ask questions. But to the following members, what I'm requesting is that I'll give the first round. I don't know whether I will go to the end of the but let me start from this side to that side. Honourable Member Mlengane. Mm.
Thank you. Maybe let me start by one appreciating the report. Though, as you indicated, that it arrived a bit late for us to apply our minds into it. But the time that we allowed for the input is there. The second one, Chair, would be, though on a lighter note, would be to just let this entity understand, together with the department, that whenever they make presentations to us, we listen. And we keep whatever Transnet has said to us, whatever department has said to us, whatever particular province has said to us,
The Act 2007
on what?
We always
keep those in our mind.
For instance, my first question would be, around this coach, there are two statements. One is saying we have got an obsolete, if I can use that word.
Oh, it was not used.
Obsolete infrastructure. And there's now a focus of research. I would be specific.
Chair, these coaches which are running the Kairi,
are those new for refurbish? I have a reason, because 2008 I had a pleasure of being a member of the provincial legislature, serving in the Department of Transport in the province of England,
and participated when we were looking at the 2007-2008 financial year. I know what is written in that document by heart in terms of those coaches. That's why I'm asking. Are those coaches new coaches or established coaches?
Chair, how is the condition? I would mention deliberately just two stations, Chair. You would understand that Honorable Principal,
my neighbor in KZN, is not around, so always jump into KZN because my neighbor, and I know that.
The condition of the two stations,
the Umtata and the Kokstad station,
in terms of the running, do you still have trains running there? The condition, particularly the condition of operation. Maybe chair to be specific. The rail turnaround time,
so that we see whether it is feasible for us to maintain such.
One would want to understand,
particularly in Kokstad, when you have a situation now where the rail is literally, you know, cut off, when you are talking improvement, if there are no contradictions. As you get now to Kokstad, it's cut off. I was there over the weekend. It's part of the area.
So I'm looking at you touched on the rail accident. So one would not help much on that. But now, what chair was not touched also was the accommodation or the houses for the railway. I would be interested. Once more, Kokstad and you would know somebody representing the Eastern Cape that you would need to show what's happening in Nepal. Whether those are still houses of that in terms of them, do you have people living there? If you go to Kokstad, was there a deliberate decision to sell out those houses? To who? And now if you are talking of engineering the whole region, where would you accommodate your workers?
Chair,
I'm looking with interest at the cluster strategy
summary
of your key intervention. And having listened to the challenges that you were raising,
particularly between cluster and metros and all the strategies, and one would
like to understand,
check,
just generally, how do metros, municipalities, as well as provinces work with Strasa and the Department of Transport to improve rail services? Do you have a normal and well coordinated interaction, or if a question
sensation of you get this and a surprise and you react after, like your Cape Town metro Gaza relationship, which looks like you have to shoot from the hip just to address the question. And you look at you know, the discourse. It's very easy for you when you are talking the King Shaka Ray operating system. Very easy, normal. You have no budget. But when it comes to this one, it's like you wasting money, not well, and all that.
So, I want to remember how to stick to questions because time is again.
Sure. The last one, but this was a question. The last one, sir, would be on your acquisition plan for the new train. Do you have an action plan with timeline wherein we can be sure that going towards 2015, really we would see the first train being tested?
Thank you,
Mr.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, I've got a lot of comments to make, but unfortunately you won't allow us to do it. But firstly, I'm very happy to hear that there is a turnaround strategy at last, because we've had many meetings and a lot of meetings, and at last it seems to me there is a turnaround strategy. Thank you very much for that, and I think the whole of South Africa at the end of the day will like it, and they will support you all the way. You talk a lot about corridors, and it seems to me at this stage the most of the corridors are around our rural areas and the urban areas, and the rural areas is left alone, and that is where our people is suffering. It is in our rural areas. There's no transport. They can't get their crop and things to the markets and the animals and the livestock. What are you going to do to help these people as well? It is nice to hear the urban areas, things is going on there, and the infrastructure is taking a certain direction now, a positive direction. But our rural areas, I think you must tell us a bit more. What are your plans into the future? How are you going to help these people? And what are you going to do in these areas? There's a lot of our stations, the old stations, and you mentioned it quite a few times, that is old structures that was in a certain period. But I think also we must forget about that now. That is something away, and we slipped up. Because from since 1994, there was every year there was a budget. But what happened to that budget? Nothing happened into rail. And now suddenly we're getting awake, and now we get into this. Now we must do something. Maybe it is too little too late, but I'm positive. If I'm listening to you, I'm very positive. You talk about the equipment and safety equipment on trains. Last week there were a huge train accident in close to Costa. Trucks was collided with the train, and what training do the drivers have? You said they got a 2 months training, but in first aid, if there's really people who's getting injured on such collisions, can the train the drivers or people on the train, are they really in that position to help injured people? Yeah, and then also I just want to mention that as well, and that was very good for me. You mentioned the whole situation around BEE, and we believe BEE must have their cut. You can't put them aside, but we must also have people who have the necessary skills. People who are appointed on merits. You can't just put people in and at the end of the day. You must do the job over. So that is very good. And to train the people in a positive way and give them that open opportunity society for all, so that they can get into a job and that they can skill themselves, and at the end of the day they can look after their families. And I think that is very positive. You also concur South Africa with China. I don't think that is really fair to South Africa at this stage to do it, because the Chinese people are very motivated. They've got a passion in everything they've done in their country, and at this stage there's a lack in South Africa regarding that. And that is also our people must be skewed in a certain direction. And the moment we get at that stage, I think that we can also do the same thing as in China and other countries. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Jacobs.
Yeah, Chair. One of the vision of course is saying they want to have the same reliable and efficient rate. My question would be, how do you measure yourself to say I'm succeeding on this? Because if you look at that carriage which is having people overcrowded on it, that was the situation in the 70s. When I went to Soweto for the first time in the 70s, this is still the situation. And can we say, are we succeeding? Because there is no change. We find the same overcrowding is still there even today. The other one, you have made a good presentation, but I'm worried about the implementation plan. Because it's easy, you can make a good presentation. But what we want to see is what is happening on the ground. Whether are we able to achieve that? And the other one on the issue of safety. You know, a long time ago, there were railway police. I don't know what happened to that. Because they were the people who were looking for the safety in the railway stations. And you could not hear any theft that was happening in the railway station when the railway police. I don't know what happened to that. We also have to look on that issue. And also on the issue of fighting with unions over shifts. Why don't you hire people that they should know they are working for shifts? Because that would be their contract. And there is no union that they can fight them, because the person who knows that when he completes his forms, he has already written that he's going to work shifts. So I think that's another issue that we need to look at. I don't know whether there's any synergy. For instance, you have this scout train, which is a modern train. And now, what you are saying, you are looking for something else. So it tells me that there was no plan when scout train was introduced. Because I think we should be following after that step. Because the way it is built, it is something different from what you are showing us on there, or on that picture. Because how train it takes the shape of a speed train. But that one, it does not reflect anything to show that it is going to be a speed train. I think China, Japan, we were there on a speed train in Japan, which is similar to that one. And they were telling us a 2-hour drive, they take it in 15 minutes. So that is the kind of a train that we want for South Africa. Because if we do that, we will be encouraging people to use. To use the railway system. And the other one, we are talking about building. I don't hear about saying maintaining. Because we are going to build, what happens after that? Who's going to maintain all this? So are you making any provision that after that, this thing should be maintained? Look, I'm from the first thing. There was a talk that they want to revive the railway line between Bloemfontein and Tabanchi and Butabe. But I don't hear you mentioning it in your plans, because most of the people who work in Bloemfontein come from Tabanchu and Busade. So I think that should also be in your plans. The other one, it was this issue of, it's unfortunate a rep from Northern Cape is not here. They are always carrying about DR. They say DR was one of the busiest stations earlier, but tonight didn't. And it was given a lot of people work, and now people are without jobs. I think that's something that you have to think about when you make your plans. The last one, this platform, I think it should be a self-sustainable entity. I'm always worried all the time that these government parasitas, they always want something from the government. but they don't become a profitable organization. Because if you become a profitable organization, you stop to be a burden to the government. Because you'll be self-sustainable. But what is happening now, all the time, you will look for something that the government should bail you out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will follow my colleagues, but I'll start by one. You see, there is a thing which is worrying me. Concerning your presentation on page 7, in terms of the pictures which you're showing there, I think another contributing factor of poor reliability, delays, and cancellations is also the stealing of copper cables. Now, my question, I'll find it with page 12, where you spoke about the signaling program. My OR is one. I want you to find out where do you have any system inside the signaling program to monitor where is the problem. I'll put an example. I was doing a worker in power station, into the power station. So if anybody touches the fence, any side of the power station, the control room will indicate that there is a mess somewhere. So here in South Africa, our challenge is that there's no synergy. There's no coordination. Your system doesn't talk to each other. That's why people are able, yes, I hear you, you're reporting a petition of SMS about the delays and the like, but to monitor the equipment which you are using, you don't have the system. And then also, which is worrying me, you see, you indicated that our trains are 5 times heavier than the modern trains. Yes, Mr. Jacob Cabot, it's unfortunately you are dealing with fire and the engineer you spoke about to France and China and like ourselves as part of our state study at 12. I was looking on page 22, the train which you were talking about and the train which I've got here, which we saw, which is, if I'm not mistaken, is 320 kilometers per hour. It's designed in order so that it can be equipped to be used as a friendly. The head is flat and straight. But this one, I can't believe that it can be so fast. Because it's just in a little more. Now, these are some of the things which I wanted to raise. And then also, you spoke about officials. I'm very happy to, and I think the committee also welcomed your call that we must organize unannounced visits to stations. You see, it mustn't end there as well. Also to the railway line, and the issue which you raised about the issue of Northern Cape in Hanover and DR, and the which Ubaba alluded to Mutata and Goksa, I'll add. For an example, Mr. Wulaki, if you go to a railway line between Betal and Mokosol, there was a railway line, but if you go inside the farms, somebody is digging the railway line and they are selling. And railway is quiet. That is a huge money involved. I can tell you now, not tomorrow, because if I say tomorrow, people will thought that maybe you have phone some people. You can go now and check. It's horrible in some of these small towns with this railway line. And the thing which you raise on page, I think on page 22, expansion of railway. Of railing over long term. There is a thing which is worrying me. Most of the mistakes, your focus, is metro. Go to township and see what is happening. I don't think that you do have a program for townships and where the people are staying. Because if you talk about one machine alike, it's part of metro. All the Prata, their focus is metro only. You go to Eastern Cape, it's metro. You go to here, Western Cape is metro, go to Topic is metro, but Prasa is not visible in some of the provinces at all. Yes, I was also, you also like to welcome the issue of Maputo, I mean, not Maputo Corrido, Moloto Corrido, which is touching Mpumalanga, but partly, if you can see, it's very close to Pretoria. But you don't have any programs for the provinces. And what another thing which is worrying me, your report
I think we also welcome about your report about to manufacture some of the equipment to build some of the things here in South Africa. That's very good. But what the challenge is that you never gave us the statistics. What are you anticipating? How many people are going to be employed? And why I'm raising that one, are there key challenges in terms of employing our people? It's very disturbing sometimes whereby some of the big guns, when they come here in South Africa, they find that certain percentage of people from outside. But how do you deal about this issue of skill to give it to South Africans? It must be clear that we must know that so that when we support your budget, so that we know exactly that this is going to employ how many people, etc., etc. And then there was that one which also which was raised about the issue of your infrastructure, which is dilapidating in most of the small stations. I don't think that you do have a data of your own infrastructure in these small railway stations. Your infrastructure, which including the houses which you're talking about, Mr. Mlenza, I don't think that there is any connection. That what do you have in terms of these things? And then what I would suggest then is that to give you an opportunity, but please give us the data. And I was saying, because another thing which is surprising me, in terms of some our sources, when we check, already the issue of tenders, I agree with, because I think you alluded to, your tenders for signal systems for KZN and Western Cape networks were issued at the end of 2011. Is that true? It's true. Fine. You know, what is worrying us? We don't want to expect the question which was raised by Van Mlenza about the issue of Novaba U. Jacobs about the issue of the present structures of trains, because you said that, they're no more suitable for 1-2-3. We don't want a situation which is like here in Western Cape about the issue of AMA bridges. There are lots of bridges standing up here in AMA. I think there are 3 or 4. One is at the waterfront, one is somewhere there. There are lots of bridges which are not finished. And the billions of grants we used. At the end, you know why I'm raising this. I pick up the thing that some people, they thought that the people who are taking feelings, they can bring income here. Not so much. Because that people who are playing feelings about 1-2-3, we should talk about the issue of the station. It's once in a blue moon. It happens once after 10 years or 5 years, some people to sign a contract that we wanted to make a feeling here in South Africa with the citizens. We need something which is going to plow back to us. Let me leave it to there so that I can give an ample time to start getting to this point. Because I can raise a lot of issues. There are a lot of issues which are very pending. For example, the last one, which is worrying us. That's why we wanted to request and suggest to Brasa to speed up the process of railway. If you go to some of the provinces, we were debating a few days ago. If you go to the provinces, the issue of trucks, they can build a road now after a month or two. Finish. I can take you in particular in Mpumalanga, not in Mpumalanga, where there are a lot of trucks, a lot of mines. Go and check the condition of the because of the trucks. Yes, because there are no railways which can be used as alternative to reduce some of the challenges. The whole province is potholed, but in particular in Kyabandi, where there are a lot of trucks. There are facing a lot of problems. I'll give you this opportunity to respond.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks, Honorable Members. I think these are important questions that have been raised. I've taken note of each one of the questions. I'll respond in two ways, Chair. Both, let me make the general point and respond to the specific. It's quite clear to me that we have prepared the presentation to answer all the questions the committee asked us to answer about what they're doing, some of the needed problems. But it's quite clear that when you go into this, you'll find a lot of issues in their own right. And I want to suggest, Honorable Chair, that the committee should consider actually putting together a program over a period of time so that we have the interactions on the specific issues that are there, ranging from sustainability of railways and everything. But secondly, I think it's also very important that the committee, we, maybe through the Department of Transport, we also do deal with the issues about the institutional arrangement who's responsible for all of the issues. There's quite a lot of issues that are coming here. I'm glad it suits me well when I hear the committee. I think the two positive things that are coming up from the intervention by members of the committee, one is the agency in delivering on some of the changes. I think it's very important, and I think we take good note of that. The second issue, of course, is quite clear that they want us to do more, particularly outside of the metros. I think it's something that we have to work on. So, of course, this is very important to also appreciate the fact that we are talking about passenger railways. The Prasa is not some of the issues we're discussing here. They deal with either freight rail, for example, particularly the outlying areas, the houses that we are referring to, and all of those things. And it's quite clear that here. I think at a more fundamental level, Chair, I think that we need not as a committee, not as Prasa, not as a department of as a country, to accept that we have to rebuild our railways on a new basis. I think that to suggest that we are going to do it some other way, through we can do certain things in a short term to manage, to mitigate them, but we have now reached a point where we have to recapitalize our railway system. And I'm not talking only about passengers, I'm talking also about freight, as it were. It is, we can say, or we can put it there differently. The current system is like a hardship filler, you know, making an old horse. It says the Durban July, keep on, but standing still. That's basically, that's the essence of it. So the system that, for example, Honorable Jacobs said, traveled on in the 70s, you see there's the same system. But what has happened is it's deteriorated so much. It's the same system that I used as a youth when I was going to do the golf caddy in the townships of Pretoria. So it's very important that we then look at the more, what is the main challenge? The main challenge facing us is the renewal and the modernization of our railway system. This one can keep going for example, but the main challenge is one of the modernization. I compare with China as an example. Because China was where we were, and it has been very bold in its interventions. But Chair, I think that, let me address some specific questions. I think starting with some of the important issues raised by Honorable Mesa. I think that are very important. I'm not, in particular, a very strong supporter of the Thai rail model, as it is. I've raised it with the province before. Thai Rail is not run by Prasa, it's not run by Transnet, it's an initiative by the Provincial Department of Roads and Transport in the Eastern Cape. So I've actually indicated that outside of the Prasa environment, it cannot work. And that is why you see that they take all coaches, some of them is even wooden floors, they take even longer, I've traveled on that train. They even take far longer. So that model will never work. And I think that is something that we need to change. I've engaged the province is now talking to us on this particular issue. Hopefully we'll be able to find a much better model. But it's not a Prasa product. They do contract Prasa as well as Transnet freight rail to help them with some of their operations. But when I look at the locomotives, when I look at the coaches, when I look at the condition, I agree with you that you can't say you're presenting a railway solution and you present something that is performance. It's actually far lower than what you used to have. So I think that is something that we have to look at and change. I've said that. Even the cost. I've said to the province that the cost of running that very old system you're introducing is actually huge. And how are you going to maintain it? And that is why after 2 years, the province will not sustain. And they have to shut it down. They owe Prasa and Transnet a lot of money. But I think that ultimately we have to look at the final solution. The same issue, and that affects the conditions of the stations you mentioned, Honorable Mendana, the Mtata and Kokstad more specifically. These are transfer assets that have been leased by the province, the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, to use. So we believe that we should take over, for example, the Mtata, Queen's Park, East London, and that is why we're putting over 400 million rand to turn that situation and modernize it and ensure that people are now. And I think that is the, that would benefit a lot of villages. For example, if you look in areas like Yuki, Makia, and those kind of areas. So we have thought the rural, we've actually discussed with members of the committee. Mutura Swartz was a member of the original manager in Eastern Cape before he moved to Cape Town. He'll tell you that we've had a lot of engagement in that part, even with the provincial government, where we say, how do you use rain in the context of rural Eastern Cape to stimulate the kind of economic activity for Eastern Cape? And I want to put it without any, again, without pure contradiction, that Kyrie is not the model to take. And I think that I know that there were good intentions. I was still in the Department of Transport when it was because at that time, the province and the Department of Transport nationally put a lot of money, and they made sure that they had a model that was going to combine passenger and freight. When Transnet, so most of those of the timber and other products were going to be moved on that particular line. When the plant was pulled out of that, the passenger side was left alone. So the speeds and the resources generated make it actually quite unsustainable. We must have, so it is a program of the province. They use both the two stations. But I agree with you that if you look at Kokstad Way City, not only for the Eastern Cape, but the connection with KwaZulu-Natal is very important. And in fact, it raises a much bigger question. Why did you allow 10 years ago for some of these branch lines, so-called branch lines, to be closed down? It was a mistake. It was a decision that was made by Transnet, our sister company, and we were not blaming them because we were ourselves in government at that particular point in time. But today we must stand, and I must say that for government or Transnet, you remember that the issue that in this line, they must Transnet says anything outside of its major core network that is not profitable is a branch line that must be closed. Now, there are two parts. There are railway lines that will still build specifically to support the system farmers. We're not saying revive a railway line to support the farmers. But there are railway lines that are very important for regional development. I think one of the members spoke about taking your produce to the market and everything. That is very important. So we think that this blanket approach of closing branch lines and everything was a mistake. And I want to argue that that's a mistake. It's actually evidence and experience over the past 5 years show that we've actually locked up a lot of people or even small producers from participating in the economy. The issue is that we are doing everything for a cost, and that's where the problem starts as well. The transparent consideration on those lines is what they generate and what they spend into those lines. Whereas the sustainability and regional economic development doesn't even feature some of those issues. So I think something that we must revisit if we want to succeed. The railway houses, again, they belong to Transnet, and most of them. There are those in the urban area that will transfer to us, and we've taken a decision that most of these, there are railway employees who live in some of those, that they must be given the first right to own those houses rather than being kept. Because if you look at it, even some of them will be occupied. Remember in the past, railway, particularly drivers and some of the key supporting people used to live in those communities. Now there have been a lot of changes in the country, and even the technology that we have now has made some of those structures actually not actually even a requirement even in their own operations. So on the cluster side, we've taken a decision that we work with railway houses, unless if they are linked to our operation, we retain them. But otherwise, that we said we'll apply to the Minister of Transport for some of those, the people who are living them, to be given the first right to own them, because if they are living there, they are not properly maintained, they deteriorate, and that's something that we don't want to do. So I think that we've got quite a plan there. I want to confirm we work quite well in the cities. All the cities, including Cape Town, we've got what we call a rate steering committee, where we sit together and plan. The rate plan that was approved by Cabinet in 2006 was a detailed research program not done by the former SRCC, that was done at the regional level with the participation of provinces and the cities, and it went to approved by Cabinet on that basis. Of course, there's the Western Cape issue, where you find that now and then you've got disagreements about what, for example, needs to happen. But I'll assure you that we're working quite well in the city. I'm meeting with the city tomorrow. there is a memorandum of agreement that we are actually considering, so that we can, where we have identified priority projects, where we'll do together as part of improving public transport. But now and then we disagree, like we're looking at the airport, whether we should have an airport link or not. And from a transport point of view, someone will say it's a luxury, I'll say it is actually a critical necessity, you must have to invest in it. So all this is the impact on investment decisions that we have. So I think these are some of the issues, but I think that for us, we do not have modern coaches. We've got old coaches, and then we've got those that have been refurbished. But refurbished is either upgraded or heavy maintenance that has been done on those coaches. But if you look at what we've refurbished, what we're using, and what Kyrene is using as an example, you see that Kyrene is actually even an affront to what government stands for. We shouldn't be doing things that way. We should, if we're introducing a service, I think that one of the members of parliament stood up and said, it takes even longer to travel from East London to go to Turkey. That you have to sleep over instead of then being a visit and a bed again. So it's not something that. The turnaround times for railways are determined, of course, by technology. Let me give you an example. If you take a modern train, in the morning they use a train that is long. As the peak goes down, they're able en route at the station to uncouple the train, and they make them two trains which move in two different directions. Okay? So it tells you how efficient the modern railway system, the modern railway technologies are today. Whereas the current one that we run, if you were to change, you run 12 coaches in a day. During the off-peak and off-peak disruption, there's a good reason for that. And the reason is that if you were to try and uncouple that train with the old technology, it's not just a matter of the train coming together. You must take them to a yard. It becomes an operation itself. So it's more cost-effective and more efficient to actually run them without uncoupling them. So there's a reason. So you can see that the advantages of modern technology also give you flexibility. Because you can have a train in the morning loading a lot of people. When it comes back, then you can speed it and move into two different directions. When the afternoon peak comes back, the train can combine again. And then we have that. So these are some of the issues that are there. But unfortunately, I'm not able to speak, for example, on behalf of Kyrie. I've been asking for all this. Please transfer it. Let's do it differently. And let's not use the line that is currently being utilized. That one is fine. If you want to have tourism on that line, it's fine. But the main line for greater access must be a different line that is there. And I think that is our view. We think that we appreciate that view. We think that it is a scientific view, and we think that it's something that will sustain. Honorable Funagal stands very much against for the question. I think that we've been implementing the strategy again as I emphasized since 2006. What we have, we've completed the first phase of that project. So this is not a new turnaround strategy. We are basically talking where we're shifting towards from refurbishment to upgrade towards recapitalization of the assets, so that we prepare for the next 4 years. We are not investing for 3 years. We are now investing so that the next 4 years we can have a railway system that supports the country as it goes. Maybe my presentation has given the impression that we have. Of course, 70% of our business. Remember, the old South African Rail Commuter Corporation was created by law to save 6 metropolitan centers. The metro system does not work in the world. It's strictly a suburban system that most people in the however, we've done a lot to introduce even new and additional services for the different branch lines and rural areas that are there. I think that is one of the major things that is there. Through the main line passenger services, we've looked at services. I'll give you an example. In the past, areas such as Genko, in KZN, there used to be major railway places. Somewhere in the 80s, additional was taken to shut those down. We are bringing back those because both for people in rural and northern Napa to connect to Durban as well as to Johannesburg is very important. And they need an affordable transport. So we are currently busy working with that in making sure that we do some of those things. The Umtata, Queenstown, land is targeting at villages. We've done also a rural strategy, rural rail strategy with two provinces. One is Limpopo. In fact, we found a lot of surprises that there's more demand for rail in the rural areas than even in the urban areas on some of the corridors, which we assumed in the transport planning side that actually the demand is only in the urban areas, metros, moving workers. And this is what we call the commuter system. But in the rural areas, it's key when people want to access the resources there. And I agree, I think Honorable Jacob Tosar when I spoke about the Blue Fontaine, line and what we are doing there. The only thing that stopped that project was because we were taken to court. I think that's the issue that I was speaking. The bus company that operates there felt that if we activate that line, they're going to lose the subsidy. They went to court. They took the Department of Transport, the provincial government, and SRTC to court and tried to block that particular line. So it's been part of our plan to done even a feasibility work on that particular project, and I think that it's one of the major things that we have. It's Honorable Kuna speaks about the budget since 1994. Again, the reality speaks for itself. There was no significant investment in railways until 2007. If you see, for example, investment in railways, we're spending on average 1.9 billion rand on capital investment. That is nothing in the railway environment. It was only after 2006-2007 that you see actually that the investment in railways has grown by 14% per annum. So it means that government investment in railways since 2007 onwards has actually been going up, and I think that's a good thing in line with what we are trying to achieve. Train accidents, I think that as I said, that I spoke about our thing, you've raised an important point that not all our drivers are trained on interstate. And I think that it's something that we'll take back and actually look at that. We've drawn in people who are trained in first aid in some of our key stations and on the long distance train. However, we've never looked at it in the way that we have, because usually what happens when the train is involved in an accident, drivers are themselves traumatized and they require counseling. We maintain counseling services for drivers, but if you hit a human being or you hit a car, they're injured, and we put these guys away so that they have. So the issue of them doing that first aid as an issue is something that I think we take seriously, and I think we'll see how practical we can implement that. I've noted your view on DE. I think that I've said it, and I think that we are right. We need to be a nation at work, hard at work, building the country, delivering the infrastructure, and making sure that things are working. Finally, let me deal with the issues that I think Honorable Jacob raised. I think that we are in the middle, Honorable Jacob, of an implementation. We are not starting a plan. We are in the middle of that implementation. And if you look at it, for example, if you measure how you succeed in railway, the function of what the number of things. When I look at the train, to compare the train system in the 1970s, it used to perform very well. Of course, because it was a system that was designed to move black, cheap African labor from the townships and dormitories into town, and the comfort and the safety was not actually taken that seriously at that time. Today, I think that in the 70s, the system never experienced what we call capacity constraints. Today, it's experiencing capacity constraints, particularly during the so I think that if I look at what we have done in since 2007 today, you'll actually see that there's been a lot of achievements and successes that we've scored, both in saving metro rail from collapse, but also in some areas improving the kind of services that are required in that area. So we are in a third phase of that. I also want to confirm that we have railway police. You can recall that the old railway police, you are correct in your observation, were very powerful. They used to discipline. I remember myself personally as a youth who was doing all sorts of things, like all young people do. I experienced the wrath of the railway police for staff riding and all sorts of things. But over time, we brought them back now. the railway police, of course, are not part of the of Prata. They are part of the South African police, but dedicated to railway. Both Prata, Gautrain, Transnet freight rail on the freight rail. Over 3,000 railway police have been trained and are deployed in the system. And we've had the benefits of that. I spoke earlier on that when they were introduced, we've had crime going down by 40% in the railway environment. It's true. They've gone, if you look at the number of, you measure that in terms of reported cases of crime, whether savings, robbery, whatever, that has gone down. And I tried to explain, and I think that the researches and the arrests that the police have made and their patrols. Are we getting the benefits from railway police in the current structure? I'll agree with you. We are not getting the full benefits of that. It's something that I'm taking up with the police. I've discussed it even with the different commissioners of to say that we think that there must be this in the, for example, in the morning peak, we don't want the police inside the train because the trains are overcrowded. But their visibility, particularly people are facing, becomes a bit, it serves as a deterrent in that environment. We don't think that they're doing that now. We think that they're changing their for example, what is it called, their shift in the midst of the peak of the railway. But they are there and they're working with our security people. And I think that we're building 24 police facilities in railway stations. Station, Retreat, Belleville, Philippi, Denebo, Mabopane, Komashu, and we built all those facilities. The police are not operating outside the rail environment. They operate from within the rail environment. And they do quite a pretty good job. But I think that we can still do more for them. We have noted your comment on the shift system to say that when new employees join, and they join in terms of that. But I think the point I was making is that the unions have now signed the black and white. That they accept that we have a shift system. So it's a big tool for us, and we should be happy with that issue. Finally, Chair, the comparison with our train. Because I think we are comparing two different trains. We are buying, firstly, what we call commuter trains. Commuter trains are not the same as long distance. The trains that you're describing as 340 to 400 kilometers per hour are the trains that you're going to move when you build the line from Johannesburg to Durban, from Moloto to Pretoria, or from Skukuneland to Mokina, and also into the neighboring country. That is a high-speed rail. Commuter rail does not run. Even the Gautrain train is not a commuter rail system. It's actually structured like a regional system. Okay? A commuter rail system means the station here, the next station is 2 kilometers. It will never run, and you can never run even at 140 kilometers. You can only do that at about 120. Even when you go to the UK, even with the wider standard gauge that they run. For the suburban lines, they're running at about 80, 90 kilometers on average. Because the train is, the station is here, the next one is a kilometer or two. So if you pick, you can't go to a consistent bridge within that thing. The cost and your maintenance will be quite cheap. So, here we are not talking about the high speed railway. We are talking about the train that must be from Eastern Fabric to Denver. It's literally changed. That train, if you want to reach that point within a minute or two, you must move it about 80 kilometers there. But where you need 250, 300, 320, and 350 like China does, is the distances that you have. For example, the Cape Town, Johannesburg, Messina. High speed, if in the next 40 years you say you build that line, you cannot move at less than 350, or else you are not going to get the benefits of that. So I think that let's not assess what the train that the country is buying is for the metro rail system to have modern trains, and the metro rail train can move up to 120 at a time, and at the most 140 if you take a much more open line, let's say Johannesburg to Perenachen line, for example. You can run at 140, but this train of high are not the high speed train. The high speed train will come in the second phase, and I think that it's very important for the honourable members to distinguish between the commuter train as well as the long distance train that will be buying into the future. I spoke at length also about the maintenance. Honourable Jacobs said earlier on that we are talking about building. I tell you that I spoke about improving the quality of our own maintenance, not on the refurbishment of coaches only, but on the infrastructure side. Because particularly when you talk about stations and facilities, the key thing is cleaning and maintenance. And the man next to you, Honorable Jacobs, his job is nothing else but to make sure that that maintenance, particularly in the facilities, is done quite. Did you have a train on? Did you have a plan regarding the health train? Yes, there were witnesses. When the health train was introduced, there were problems. One of the major things was that, can the province, for example, afford to introduce a train similar to the health train? The reality of the matter is that the province went ahead and introduced that train. But later on, realized that actually, health train is so expensive for the province. That is why they had to get there. They are now getting from the Division of Revenues. The dollars are getting every month a transfer from national government. But if we don't do that, what it will simply mean is that Gauteng will have to take its budget for health, housing, whatever it has, and spend it on an expensive project as a on the Gauteng. But you remember when the Gauteng was approved by cabinet, it was accompanied by a very detailed plan on the integration between Gauteng, Metro Rail, and the bus systems and the taxi industry. That plan was approved by cabinet. So I want to say that there was and there is a plan on the integration side. Between PRASA and the health train, there is also a team that is working on integration at different parts of the network to make sure that if you travel on the health train, you're able to jump into Metro Rail or vice versa, or if you get out of the station, you're able to get into a bus that is owned by Johannesburg and we are, I think that the Honorable Chair has also raised some of the important issues. I just want to highlight one or two. We agree with you on the stealing of paper, copper cables. It is, of course, the work of syndicate. Someone is taken from the township to steal this thing. He's paid 200 rand, 300 rand. But when you look at where the copper cable ends, you'll see that it actually ends up with a very organized structure of bamboo. And that is why the police have been working with us. We are not the only victims of cable theft. Strata, and that is mainly Metro Rail, is Transnet on their lines, is Eskom, is municipalities, is Telkom. And that is why the Minister of Justice said, we're even looking at making this a serious offense that is punishable, that is treated like sabotage. And also that companies who are involved trading in these things, if they found to have bought stolen cables, then they are also paying the music for what it is. So I think it's a good move by government. It is costing us a lot of money. We lose our 200 million rand a year on cable theft as it were. And if you look at the disruption to services, it's quite immense. So cable theft is a problem. But again, you go all over the world with the modern technology. They have now moved away from the technology that we're using, the kind of cables that we use. Mainly, they've moved to new technology. They've introduced them. We've also introduced some of them starting from 2010, but it does not reach a point where the entire network will be I agree with the Honorable Chairman's observation that one of the major things we have with our radio system is the fact that it is an open system, meaning therefore that it's not protected. As it is, unlike, for example, many railway systems that are either underground or highly closed, ours is an open system, which means people can get into that path. But we've started a program where we introduce different kind of fencing, for example, particularly those that are applied in the military, and that gives you the kind of sense when someone interferes, but also means you literally get injured. So there are companies that have been looked at who can provide us, and we get that advice from the kind of products that are designed for the military. We've got shepherds and a lot of data. For example, the committee wants to discuss the new rolling stock program, we did a detailed feasibility. You know, I said that the feasibility shows that we create 65,000 jobs, but it doesn't just mention the numbers. It actually shows sector by sector where these jobs could be created. And I think that at the right time, after this presentation, as I said, that we need them specific discussions on it, so that we can then look at the data. Because we have, between PRASA and Transnet, the main data on railways, you never find it anywhere else. And I want to assure you that we've got that, and we are always prepared to share.
But I get to check that and learn to make it common shot as well. So that you don't know when you make a presentation and you prepare for what you are trying to answer at that point in time. But I said the committee that there is additional information that that we want to bring. And so I'm quite happy with all of that. So Chair, I'm saying that the trains are valuable. The first phase of our mobilization program is about the commuter rail space. It's not about the long distance. It's not the high speed long distance train. And I think that we'll come to that, and maybe the design that you've seen during your visit abroad, you'll start to see to see that. Because there's a reason why that design is like that for a high speed for a train that runs at over 300 kilometers. But this one, once you do between what is it called, the two stations, Chris Army and the Kosile station in Kailicha, that next two shots, you never do 150 kilometers every day. But let's not forget that the current network that we run in the country in the 70s and 80s could pick up speed up to 150 kilometers. So I think that today South Africans who are happy with the fact that how train does 150. It is an improvement, but it's not a revolution. The real revolution lies in the high speed. And I hear members of the committee saying, let us go in that particular direction. Chair, I want to assure you, I know that the people of Mpumalanga feel very strongly about the Moloto Rail Corridor, the Moloto Rail project. And I think they're correct. But I think the people of Limpopo should equally be, because the second phase of this project goes right into the Skukumelan region, as it were. So the Moloto is not the end, it's but the beginning of a massive project where someone who lives there can also get into Johannesburg within an hour or two if you get the speed right. So I think these are some of the issues Chair wanted to raise. I just want to ask the CEO of our rail division if he wants to add anything, and of course the CEO of our Prata technical division on the maintenance side, Chair, before we talk to them.
Thanks, Chair. I'll only touch really on the issue of theft and bundles of the assets. As you indicated, that this is a major challenge that we face in our division. But one of the things that we are doing, and we started here in Cape Town, we started installing what we call bundle-proof equipment to protect our point machines, our signal boxes. And in fact, that intervention seems to be working quite well. And you would note, I mean, the amount of money that we spend in securing the system, it's such a huge proportion of our cost. In fact, we're supposed to focus and pay attention on running operations. But if you look at the level of emphasis in just securing the system, it's a huge cost to us. There's quite a disproportion. So it is a major challenge. In fact, last week when we launched our program of action here in Cape Town, we raised the concern that in fact the issue of theft and vandalism, the issue of crime, generally it's been perceived conveniently as just a metro rail problem. And our view is that this is a societal problem. In fact, crime spills over to our environment. And we've put in the resources as we've indicated, but it is a problem that requires attention, and we've made it very clear even to the city and the province that in fact we need to work very closely, because it is very convenient to say this is a metro rail problem. However, it's a general societal problem. Crime is in our communities, it's in society, it spills over to our environment. So it's very convenient for people to simply say, well, that is a metro rail problem, deal with it. So we're putting resources there. I think the other critical issue, and maybe I may take the opportunity, if you look at the impact of the what we call the encroachment of settlements in our rail reserve, basically the mushrooming of the settlement in the rail reserve, and in fact the typical classical example here in Cape Town, if you look at the Kailicha line, it is a major problem that impacts on our operations. In fact, some of our tracks active tracks that run train services are used as dumping grounds. Waste, illegal electrical connections, and so on. It is a major problem. In fact, we've highlighted this with the city of Cape Town. We're working very closely with the NOC transport here in Cape Town just to highlight that problem. Now, the reality is that it impacts on our operations. Directly, the impact is very huge on our operations. If you look at the level of incidences, people struck by trains in those specific areas, it's a huge number. And we've agreed with the city that it's something that we need to address very, very quickly. So from my side, really, I wanted to highlight those two specific issues.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I think just one issue on my side to mention. Yes, part of the plan on the acquisition of the new train is that we do some changes. Of course, as you may have seen, the RFP is a component that's going to be done internally by ourselves, and the component that's going to be done by the manufacturers themselves, because that's linked to the technology that they're doing. As was indicated on the report, the phones that we have are going to go through a major upgrade in terms of their staging facilities and more training. Equipment which is going to be able to have to maintain and manage the new train. So yes, in the current budget which was shown there, there's about $1 billion that's been allocated for the upgrade of those trains. Part of the feasibility study that was done even goes into detail about the localization of some of the components, where some of the work is going to be done by third parties, and the plan is that there should be local industry that's going to do that, but there is detail on that. So maintenance, whether on the skin size, infrastructure, equipment, and training is one of the things that we're going to focus on.
Honourable Member, I think there's no support from the panel. Okay.
Honourable Chair, only two comments. Is that to indicate that the department has realized that we've been operating in an environment wherein no rail policy has existed over the years. We are busy in the process of developing a rail policy that will guide how rail revolution is going to be taken forward, and I hope that at the right time when the department issues the green paper, the whole country will be involved and engaged in ensuring that we have a rail policy that will guide South Africa going forward in the next 40 years, as the group CEO has indicated. Lastly, is on the issue that was raised by Honorable Mlenzane about the performance and our performance is measured and monitoring. The Department of Transport is responsible to monitor and measure performance of PRASA through a shareholders' compact. Thank you, Honorable Member.
Okay. Honorable Members, I think we have covered a lot of things, but I wanted to comment two or three before we do. To PRASA and the Department, the members are very, very strategic when we ask some questions. It doesn't mean that they are not aware about the real fight or what. And we know that some of these things are interlinked. Because I'll put an example, you know, I think in the entire time whereby we must call you again, your request is just that we are going to make time to call you again. Yourself, we are going to call PRASA and the department and the transport about to outline how to build our rural and urban economy. Because it's not ordinary PRASA. And we must move away from that strategy which was used in the past that when they focus to metals, rates, nothing else. No. Here is the National Council of Provinces, where we are representing provinces. We wanted to achieve something that any resources which is there in the government, it must be spread. Because
as I indicated to you about the railway line between the valley offices, yes, it's linking different in terms of people. It was very easy for the people to go back. And now there are lots of challenges. So that's why I was just making you to sensitize you that you are fully aware of what you want. And then again, which I wanted to suggest is that I think next time you must come up with a program for public participation, how to educate people about the sensitivity of this thing of chemical destiny, because it doesn't tell you correctly only to bank on the police, but another remedy is to teach people about the importance of this thing. Real brother must have a program to go out and teach people and give people the that. Another experience you should have experienced in Japan. Because, for example, like the issues you are raising now, people are dumping over the railway line and the like. You see? But if you teach them, for example, another thing which I can, we have the program for the workers, which is Kosaki, which they took it as operation in Bimbang, whereby we are encouraging whistleblowers to assist you. As long as you don't have people, soldiers on the ground, you can have the police and police and chief the police, no problem. And another thing which I'd like to highlight is that, please, man, you must try and run away about the issue of resources, outsourcing. I'll put an example, I don't say it correctly, exactly like that, but I'll put an example in one, you were explaining that. It's not in one of the railway stations, you find that there were some challenges, why there are lots of companies working there and then. Please, move away from outsourcing. Because that is affecting your own budget. Some of the things they need you, you do have a responsible women and women and men who are able, who are having capacity to do other things. So why should we outsource some of the things? And then lastly, I wanted to thank you all, and in particular the department. Department, please keep it up. You are very aware and wanted to thank you once more about what the bags which you sent to us. Because you know what is happening most of the time. Some people, they thought that SA is D only. They forget that there's nothing without us. And natural way to put in the outside, there's nothing without them. Any law which is passed the other side, it must be said to us before it goes whatever it's supposed to go. So these are two components which are equal to the same. So most of the people, when they issue whatever, they focus on NA, they forget that there are also members here. But nevertheless, thank you very much. And I'd like to thank you all the meeting.
No, they are still trying to. How many are we got there? Nothing happened.
Expensive.
Eh?
And somehow
I'm not here.
minister coming on board.
Someone left this thing, I think.
Our PMG.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.